right, good things. We were here about a week ago, but
it was a really good windy football game.
Yeah.
It got chilly. Our band got straight ones on Saturday. They had a little pre-UIL contest. They were with four or five other districts. And then we had remote picture day here. So all of our remote learners could come take pictures. We had about 70 kids show up, which is a lot. So it's close.
Good things, and I guess kind of bad things is it's pig buying season. Mm-hmm. I have six pens at the house, and I still need two more pigs. So hey, so that I'll call in the new ag teacher. Oh, dude, it's cool. I don't know if anybody still heard about all the good stuff that's happening in that department, but yeah. Things are still. I mean, the kids are excited. My little one just. We told him the other day that we're getting more pigs coming. He's like, "Oh, Mr. Collin, bringing them." So it's kind of neat, some of that stuff.
Some in my backyard you could have.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. They're a little wild on the wild side, but.
So yeah. Come over there and set up some traps.
All right. Okay. Got some cold weather coming in, starting to feel like fall. Mm-hmm. Happy about that. All right. All right. Audience participation. Participants must have signed up prior to the board meeting start time. Participants may address the board on any agenda item. Participation is limited to 3 minutes to make comments to the board, unless the participant is required the use of a translator, in which case participation is limited to 6 minutes. The board will only consider complaints that remain unresolved or being addressed through proper administrative channels and when they have been placed on the agenda. Please note the board of trustees shall not deliberate, respond, or make a decision regarding any subject that is included in the agenda that is posted. Further information on these requirements, contact Katie Key, Superintendent Secretary at 281-689-4441. All right, Land Acquisition Committee update.
Okay, Land Acquisition Committee met, it's been about 2 weeks now, roughly. I'd like to say that we've got more data for you tonight. The truth is, we don't have a whole lot more than we had then. The update to the entire board from that committee is that Fred is actively engaged, working with several different developers, not only across the street, but also in the LGI development. As y'all know, earlier conversations about LGI, we kind of are headed and slow to respond, and that trend is continuing. We're trying to get a number from them on what it costs to have a shovel-ready site in their development. No response today from Fred on or from LGI to Fred on that prospect. The other things that he's working on, Tom Hargrove is the major developer, I would say, that's pushing the 1,600-acre track across the street between high school and Timber Lakes Elementary. He was the one that, I guess, acquired the remaining acres out of that track when Lantejas' deal blew up back around the first of the year in the COVID situation. So he has since sold Four-Star, a 300-acre track on this end. And the word that we get is that you'll see dirt moving soon. And I believe they were talked to Dr. Burke this past Friday and said that there will be homes under construction within a year, within 12 months. Originally, we heard 18 months. So. That's where we're at, and that is on this side at the intersection. He did also allude that they were doing all they could from their end to push the road through from this end to 242.
Yeah. One additional thing, Thomas Secord is the developer from Four-Star, and you know that track is going directly across from the high school is what will go first. This here is Academy Homes, which is your, how many do they? 1,200 homes?
1,200, 1,300. Over here?
Yeah. 1,200 are rental homes, is what they are. So,
is that Signorelli part of that?
It's Academy. I don't really know anything about
that. That's single family rentals.
Yeah, yes. Which is a different.
Well, I read a deal the other day that Signorelli is looking to do a developer.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I don't know if it's the same one. Or.
No, that's not what I heard. And then, but Thomas, of course, said, hey, he wants to sit down and talk and
might be some interest in getting a site from them, so I don't know.
That's why he laughed at me today.
Who? Oh, you talked to him today?
I'll email him.
There you go. Also, over in that tract, again, Lantaus still owns their original 377-acre tract. It's there. They've started, Four Star has also started clearing the extra 200 acres on the tract adjacent to their original 242 site where Timberlakes is. So, you know, that, all that dirt work that you're seeing there now is just the expansion of their basically fourth stage. They have the second builder in and conversations with the third. The second builder was Castle Rock Communities. And their price point is just a little higher than that express home that the R. Horton's building. It's roughly in the 200s on up is their quote. So I'm guessing something in that 230 to 270s maybe, which we need some of that, I would hope. And then Roush Coleman will be the third builder to go into that development. And they've done some work in Tabola and some of the different areas that we see being developed throughout the county. The other piece again, LGI, Fred's working with LGI, Four Star, and Hargrove. Hargrove has shot us a price, and it's $65,000 an acre. Plus all the pro rata share of infrastructure. And yes, yeah, the honeymoon's over. Basically, once, you know, and Fred's working on numbers right there, but he said, you know, when we go to the pro rata share piece, that will push us over $3 a square foot on that property, which, to be honest, is, I don't want to say it's the going rate, but if it's not, it's real close to what other districts, especially like Conroe and Montgomery, have paid. And unfortunately, they look over there and say, well, they've paid it, you guys are schools too. So we were in the Timberlakes for like $1.30 a square foot. And basically, you're talking double, a little over double, with the same grant, same development. So that's another reason why we're pushing, trying to get other conversations. The four-star conversation hasn't been held, and we're hoping that that one, since they were the in-run developer on Timberlakes, that maybe they'll be a little easier to deal with as in relation to Hargrove. So,
has the committee come up with like an overall like
priority list?
Or like conceptual? How many sites will we eventually need in that county?
That conversation was pretty broad the other day. When you start looking at all these numbers, just that 1,600 acres across the street could yield four elementary locations. I think what we did walk away, and Adam, feel free to jump in, was kind of a priority list of our top three is land, obviously. Additional elementary sites and
auxiliary
services. Alan, you're on that committee as well, so feel free to.
So, like a goal to get the bus barn moved and maybe one day Agbarn move and stuff like that?
Well, Agbarn's been gone years. You over there?
No, what we have here.
This Agbarn?
Yeah.
I haven't heard any discussion about
it. No, I'm just saying, is that what we're talking about? When you're talking about moving facilities, when they get your bus barn
and maintenance warehouse,
and then maybe one day like FFA getting moved off campus somewhere on off campus FFA.
Maybe.
Is that kind of what we're talking about?
I mean, I think it could be part of the discussion. I mean, the other piece is, what, in addition to talking with some of the developers, including the LGI, which was the north end, was one of, like what Kevin said about elementary, trying to find a site on the north side, which there's just not much out there. The other piece of that is talking to Ben Chang. And so John Unterhunter is trying to get us a meeting with Larry and what's the other one's name?
Adam
Hespis. Because one potential solution for the auxiliary would be to look at a 20 to 25 acre tract that kind of is in between the creek and the detention pond on the high school site. And then going back beyond, like behind, because that's really land that John thinks that
Ben Chang's group won't be able to do a lot with, and that could provide, and there's a lot of outfall that could be beneficial. So I think that's another conversation we're getting ready to have. And there's another 50-acre tract, a 50 or 100-acre tract west of
the McAllister.
McAllister tract that Ben Chang also owns. And then we're also going to be looking, I mean, we're trying to find some inroads to the Doc Collins tract. I mean, maybe if we go in there and buy some of that, it's not going to be any cheaper. So I think we're all on the table. You know,
we're sitting here seeing it. It went from $16,000 to $65,000.
Yeah.
That's going to be the same thing. Once the developer buys it, they're going to put their, they know what they're projected to make, and that's what they're going to, they're not going to take less.
So maybe they just pick up a 5,800-acre tract in there and probably can get it, so.
Well, and the thing there, too, is just to make sure that, that we keep in mind about the infrastructure piece. You know, if we're buying it for long term and then and try to tap onto a developer's infrastructure in terms of water and sewer, which would be a great thing, you can cut our costs down there. But at some point in time, we're going to have to be in the water and sewer business unless we're part of one of those major developments. And I just, you know, with what Joe's going to bring to us here in a little while, I don't know that we're ever going to be able to jump out in front of the need. So that just tells me that, you know, we know it's $2-3 million for water and sewer, and it's going to get worse. We've got to keep that in mind going forward. We can buy the land now, and that's going to go up too.
So there's opportunity, let's say these subdivision tracts tie into the district's water.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes.
So if you are in the water and sewer business, then be in our best interest, right, to build it to where they can tie into our sewer as well, or no?
We could sell it too.
That's kind of
right.
Where I'm going.
And that conversation conversation's been had some.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of what capacity do you have here,
right.
And you might have more capacity for water than you have sewer, because there's two wells here, obviously, and John works well with us in those conversations.
Yeah, his exact words on the sewer piece, he said the water piece would love to tie in right under 29. The sewer piece wouldn't be much use to them, but they can work that
out. Well, I think that plant is not expandable.
Correct.
I
correct.
Think that's, and that's where I'm going.
Yes.
Like, if whatever we do, we need to consider that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that was a major part of the conversation early on until we moved it to 242 with Timber Lakes. That conversation was when they wanted to start on this side, was a part of it, and then when he decided to jump over to the other side, then that thing went silent, but it'll be back.
So we're talking about all of the land over there, 1,600 acres over there. We're talking about land behind the high school, potentially, to, you know, at some point, because we still need some infrastructure if we're pulling buses back there and things like that. We're talking about anything on 29 at all, or on the other side?
Basically, the conversations that are being held are already, other than, you know, we're just starting this conversation about north of the detention pond, Mount Splendor back there where all the dirt's piled up.
That kind of makes
that
sense.
That area back there, and if it's low-use land, mainly because it's near or part of some wetland, not wetland, but floodway-type lands. So from a development standpoint, they're either going to turn it into wetlands or they're going to have to mitigate wetlands somewhere else. They may want to keep it for wetland credits. I don't know. I'm not going to mention that word to them at all. But we might be able to grab some of that just right away back down that side, out the east side of the detention pond, and then open up back there behind the baseball field, softball field, and that area, tennis courts, for an auxiliary services type facility.
Which frees up our east campus.
Yeah, that's got to be a major goal of whatever we're going forward, getting that east campus cleaned up.
I seen something on our website the other day I was looking. It said that our district is 79 square miles. Is that sound right?
Yep.
640 acres per square mile. And they're putting homes at four homes per acre.
Sure.
What's developable?
Did Fred say 17,000 acres of developable land around here?
That's about right.
So times four. So, I mean, we have to think of some long-term things too, and that's where I've always pushed forward, moving some stuff away from just the high school site.
Absolutely.
Because how big a high school do you mean?
How long does it take for roads to catch up to what you built?
Now, that's the 2090 East roads. We talk about water and sewer. We don't talk enough about roads.
You build all you want, but then at some point you're going to be the same situation as 2090 East.
Correct.
You sit in traffic for 45 minutes trying to pick your kid up from school. Yeah.
Or even a road like tram that's like, it's not a good road for a lot of buses and traffic and stuff.
And like TxDOT and the county, that they're always behind. They never are proactive in their road getting
approach. Well, they're behind the ball.
Yeah, they wait until you got a 2-hour traffic jam and then they say, oh, we might need to do something. Yeah.
Well, your tram might be a good place for, say, an FFA facility or some other type of facility. Something that didn't get a whole lot of more, you didn't get as much road traffic as a bus one or a school.
So what I think is a positive idea that we've seen of this 1,900 acres is the idea of the parkway. And if we're going to put another school between here and 242 or 2 or 3, then you've got this other parkway. So it's almost it's another thoroughfare that we can move and take things away from. And so it's a whole different type of thinking than what we've done as a district way before I got here, which was, you know, East Campus, West Campus. Now you have these, this is just like Timberlake's now, these community schools. So I think that might at least in some way help alleviate some of the traffic.
Have we been looking at the thoroughfare, the county thoroughfare?
Oh, yeah. That's the, there's, and Thomas said that again to me on Friday.
Can you explain that?
Between 20,
Are you talking about the county thoroughfare?
The county's thoroughfare, they have a thoroughfare brand. Right. I think they just updated it. I haven't looked at the
other I haven't seen an updated one, but to be honest, this road that we're talking is very similar to what the one they had originally planned just off the corner of the Pine Woods. Because this 1,600 acres, extra 1,600 acres that we're talking about, it stretches from Pine Woods all the way back here to the high school and then goes back north.
So. But I mean, some of these, Black Tram Road is on the thoroughfare.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
it'll be better down the road. Right now, we're just going to live through it. That's why that piece of property still has great value. At $28,000, $28,500 an acre, 35 acres right there, and I'm telling you, 500 or 600 acres that's across the street will be developed at some point in time. And well, if we can't get into it, then at least we've got something across the street.
I seen they have a drilling rig in there, so I guess
well, that's Patton Village's, that's their water.
Oh, water's coming in there?
Yep.
And then, of course, the other the other one that's south of that, or I guess
yes.
of that.
Oh, no.
Martin's
They mentioned that they're going to bring the facilities farther. The one that's east of White Oak.
Yeah, that's Signorelli.
So they've started that.
They recently went.
They have started back up. They've got an underground.
Hopefully by then.
But he mentioned the engineer on that one mentioned that they're going to make super big enough.
Do we want
to
buy this?
With plans to be able to serve,
that's our plan. Like,
well, they're in the mud, so they're either going to they're have to be serviced by White Oak's mud 16 or
change people.
Well, we're both. We're in the mud and out of the mud.
Oh, we are. Yeah. They're getting us closer. Yeah. Okay, I got where you're going.
So it's lowering that price to be developed.
Yeah, we're still 300 acres away, 270 something acres away from their water, but. It's still getting cheaper by the day.
It is.
Yeah, at some point, hopefully Mark will give in and they'll play nice.
You know, I know the trams, I know that, you know, when the Kennedys came in off East River, they did a real nice job lining that up. So.
He just, 0105 is almost 4 lanes right now, so they're getting around.
We hope to have some numbers for y'all in November at least, or some options. That's what Chris is. We're going to work hard to get that meeting with Ben Chang. So.
Yeah.
Did the committee talk about the campuses, the East campuses, with the plan, or is
I
that
think the potential plan? And I think as we kind of get closer in conversations about the bond, which I know Joe and Kevin are going to talk about a little bit. Yeah, I think that's when we have the facility study that was done prior to me being here. You know, we know that the East Campus is, you know, once you hear I think we're going to have constraints that we're going to have to operate under. And so it could be that we revisit that conversation that we had with Stan Tech earlier about maybe a KA campus and utilizing some things on the East Campus. And so I think other than getting some of the stuff off of the East Campus to prepare for what we need to put there, mm-hmm. I think that's really the extent of the conversation we've had. I mean, auxiliary services, we've got to get that stuff.
And the main reason for that is that one of the key pieces that's going to pop up again is going to be junior high capacity. And your second junior high is going to come into the conversation, whether it comes into the next fund or not. We still need to be making steps to make that place ready for that decision, because that's,
yep.
you know, that's not that that's the place that where it's going, but it's a very good prospect for a second junior high if that's what you choose to use it for. You know, it's in town, it's got sewer, it's got water, it's got utilities, it's got as good access as we can get, I guess. You know, hopefully Fun Grove will go out the back way one day and that stuff leads up, but that's a very good option for a second junior high. So in order to do that, you've got to get a lot of junk off there. And there's a lot of junk over there that's got to go. But there's, you know, the replacement cost of that junk is a lot cheaper than what we're talking about, you know, building new campuses.
Absolutely.
But those are just dominoes that got to fall.
So that track next to, it backs up the Splendor Field that comes out on 29.
At 90 acres. That's,
yeah, I don't know what they're not just seeing for sale sign up. I don't know how bad that track is, but I know we thought Splendor Field, we thought that track was terrible when we could have got it for $3,500.
Are you talking about the land that we actually looked at, but then the city wanted us to do the...
That was after he got it.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the 90 acres that you were just saying. Is that the land that's
That's the one that has some wetlands issues for getting that road that they wanted us to take on most of the cost on.
And he's reserving pieces of that property for the detention for the fields.
Yeah.
So when you buy the 90 acres, you're buying their detention as well. But at $3 a foot, that's $6.5 million over on East Campus. It's not bad.
Yeah.
Good savings. That 17 or 12 acre piece that we just looked at too, they hauled in a bunch of dirt and that was way different. They've eliminated a bunch of the wetlands over there. So
fixed
the pipe that was causing issues.
Keep in mind that the private individuals can get away with a lot more than what we can as a public school. Or we can get away with it.
One last thing, on the McAllister, are we trying to negotiate with McAllister themselves, or are we waiting until they stand?
It's not that McAllister doesn't own it. It's all that stuff is already under contract or already sold to Four Star, Tom Hargrove, and
McAllister was the broker, the listing agent, right? We always called the McAllister track because that was the sign.
Yeah, that's been under contract since pre-COVID, and it blew up, and within a week Hargrove had it back under contract. Elton, what's his name?
Martin
Tejas had it all under contract. And then when they lost their money due to COVID out of New York, and Hargo, within a week, had it back under contract. And he owned the 300 acres that the rental thing, that's all he owned.
Right there.
Yeah. And then he sold that to the rental outfit. Academy Homes, and then he sold this front half to Four Star, and you've got Tejas land's got that 377 in the middle of it.
And that's total all the land that's available, right? There's nothing else?
Just in that track.
Okay.
Pretty much.
So I think really I'm anxious to sit down with Cuspis and Vincent to talk. I think that's going to be...
Yeah, because we need to get them before they get it to develop.
Yeah.
Are you talking about this land right here?
No, that's the McAllister track.
Okay. You're talking about?
I'm talking about, there's another 50-acre track that he's got west of that.
Okay.
He owns everything else, right?
Yeah.
And then there's just some, but I can't tell you the name of that because we hadn't sat down with him yet. John's trying to get a meeting.
And then the Bing Ting also had, or Bing Ting, what he had?
Aurora's.
Everything on both sides.
He's got around.
The stuff behind the sawmill, too.
He owns all that, too.
Which would be an excellent site for that side.
Yeah.
somewhere
behind the sawmill, like
down the Neach River.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that too.
So Four Star is, they're willing to talk about possibly little rig tracks here. They already own this. So you've got two different 15-acre tracks there, a 35-acre junior high possible track, and a junior high possibility right here near Timberlakes.
Katie, do you mind scrolling in on that? Sorry, I can't see. Okay, if you can't, that's okay. Oh, Kevin, I'm sorry. I thought you were doing it from your... Just scroll in. I just wanted to see it bigger, please. I'm sorry. I didn't. I thought you were navigating. It's going the opposite way. Yeah. That's okay. It's okay, Katie.
So the Spine Road, this is a little different design. Because here's Piney Woods, a high school here. They're talking, the Spine Road is supposed to come right through here. This little green is their first rendition of the Spine Road. This property here, I guess it's 256 acres, is Land Tejas. This is all part of Four Star. I believe they're purchasing this one, have it under contract.
That one they're clearing. That's what, section four right to your right, that bottom four.
That's right here. They're clearing right now.
And then farther down, too.
They're coming around. It's odd the way it looks, but this is where all those dozers and trackers are right here.
You're at the top, right. See,
that's where we are right here.
We're literally right here. So look across the street.
Okay.
Show her where Timberlakes is.
Timberlakes
is right.
That's something.
What is this, JH?
It's a potential junior high.
Possible. So I'm like, junior high, but I'm so confused. How is it possible?
So that's junior high, and this is a junior high site in the elementary school, the ES.
Plan for a process.
Right now, we could get that for a bargain basement price of $3.5 million.
55 acre deal was $3.6 million.
That's just the land.
Just land, no water, no sewer, no road.
$28,500
an acre.
Yeah, that's
$3
a
foot. And we took criticism for it, too.
Oh, yeah, we got yelled at.
So, we'll...
It's a lot to decide in the next long, 20 years. Pipeline. Yeah. But most of it depends on the next two. Yeah. Anyway. And just remember, this is just one 1,600-acre tract. Ben Chaney's got 7,000 or 8,000 right here.
And then there's 7,000.
As fast as Timberlakes
takes it to
develop it, no.
No, it's in our district, but I think that's
got him interested, according to John, about why are all these people developing, and so maybe we can get some good inroads with him.
Hey, I mean, I'm seeing just how fast it's growing. That ain't going to take long for it to get over here.
Well, and they're just, you
they're
just
starting over here, Jason.
That's a lot going on, and they're just not getting their butts up.
They're not working through.
Yeah, they're starting
both sides, meaning
both sides. You will see houses. He called me about locating facilities on 29. That's what he did.
Right here. There is some swing property here that we might can. But he says this acreage right here, which is right, the high school road, like the light, that's this, and there'll be something there in 10 months.
Oh, wow. So where's the big bridge on?
Not all 29, which is commercial. But the house
right here. This isn't John.
This is John. These are potential sites for documents that are going to be on this. So we're
They're just options.
The yellowish oranges?
The Ben Chang track that I was talking to you about, that John, it's here. It's adjacent to this. And so we're going to, when we talk to Adam and Larry, we're going to bring that up. And we're going to also bring up this piece right here. So.
It just seems unreal. It really just.
It's real.
It's real.
Doesn't seem unreal, though. Yeah.
The only thing that seems unreal to me is the price.
Does Hargrove have all that tied up south of the pipeline?
No. Been checked.
That's all been.
Everything's tied up.
Four Star, right?
Yes.
Four Star?
Yes.
Academy?
Yes.
Hargrove? Land Tejas? Hargrove? Hargrove. Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So Lance's house originally had all this.
All that land that's there, the undeveloped land.
It's been changed.
Is Lance's house been changed?
This has been changed.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's been changed.
Okay.
Aurora's.
So there's still potential.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But he is notorious for hanging onto his land.
And then selling it.
John, this has spurred some conversation.
The last conversations we had, which are years old, is yes, we will work with you when we're ready to develop.
Buddy.
What is 6.5 divided by 55 acres, though? I was trying to figure that out at an acre.
65,000
an acre?
Yes. With just the land, no utilities, no infrastructure.
No road costs.
They must think that the state is a little nicer to us on funding.
Well, like I said, the honeymoon's over.
Yeah.
My thoughts on this, just to be personal, this is going to draw a big, you know, what we just alluded to, it's going to be a big decision with that East Campus. Anything we build right here is only going to be for the growth of the West Side.
That's right.
Yeah. And so we're already taking kids from the East Side over to the West Side already. And if that is only going to take on that growth, that really puts into aspect of what we're going to do now for the East Campus, because we're still going to have to make the East Campus bright for the people that are on the East Side.
Yep.
So, I mean, it ain't not only buying this, but we got to figure out what we got to do over there too.
So you got a check? You got to write a check, Jason?
Hey, I'm just.
Before we make any grand plans, let's see.
The land committee has a priority list of things and all of that.
We're hopeful by the November regular meeting that we have some more solid numbers for you guys. We anticipate that Fred would have some today, some that aren't.
Hey, ridiculous enough. If we did that long range facility study, this was. Mm-hmm. I think just a few, but is that long-range facility study in conjunction with the growth that we have here?
Yeah, it's
I mean, knowing that
pretty close.
It's pretty close. We're working with the demographers too. I mean, we'll start all this in motion next year. I mean, in terms of getting new projections once we have a snapshot, and then we'll have the bond committee. So in the meantime, we're going to have to. I mean, we need to probably. 3-4 sites ahead if we can do that. I mean,
do we know the legal cost in, if we wanted to force people to sell?
We're talking about
condemnation.
Nope, we don't, but I can find out. Is that something y'all are interested in?
What is it?
Is this something we want to do? No.
Condemning land?
Basically, you say, just like when they widen the alley.
I see. Right.
We have that right.
We do have that right.
And these developers want to sit around and say, well,
that's
hold
true.
This land, hold this land.
At $65,000 an acre? Yeah.
And by the way, we sold it to somebody else. You can go buy it from them. Yeah, I'm open to it. I wasn't because I was always thinking about individuals and, you know, but.
These are big developers or big owners. And
corporate,
$3.5 billion
market caps.
Well, my only scene with those guys, and it goes back to the legal cost.
Yep.
Like keep you hanging out there until you're broke, you're a public entity. But do they want to?
Okay.
All right. All right. Anything the land committee? It's your committee, actually. So.
No, that covers it pretty well. Or the
we're working on.
Unless you got something else.
No, they cover priorities. Everything.
Mitchell?
We talked a little bit about DH regulation and facts and tips on Facebook. I can hand this out to you as well. So the conversation really helped us go back and do our history.
I am at a school board workshop.
The eighth regulation would help us. So our district page is 8 years old. And then after that, we had our elementary schools. They had their PTO's fake Facebook pages. And I think in 2017, we started seeing a whole bunch of little groups pop up, like a third grade elementary Miss Barron's class had a Facebook page, Facebook group. Piney Woods Troublemakers had a group. The only thing bad about groups is that you have to be accepted by the owner of that group to be allowed to be in that group, and that kind of goes against what public education is, about transparency, and about anyone being able to see what you do. So around 2018, we started funneling those groups to pages. So Piney Woods Troublemakers soon became Piney Woods Facebook page for the whole elementary school. Groups were lifted, are no longer lifted, but we said, hey, you've got Piney Woods Facebook page, so funnel your news that way. And then only this past year, 2019-2020, did we create Facebook pages for the rest of the elementary schools. So TLE, Peach Creek, and Greenlee. So it's only been this year, 2020, that Peach Creek and Timberlake got their Facebook page. And still they have their PTOs, but we have, I want to say, control of those pages that are official Facebook pages. We do the branding, we do the cover photos, we make sure that they all align and tell our story and unify the promotion. So that helped us with our history and making us go back and check all those things. Because we forgot that two of those had just started this year. So that was good. We've been talking to our social media managers, and I kind of use that term loosely because all of our social media managers on campuses do other full-time jobs. So, helping them make sure that their pages are catching the eye of their customer, which is, you know, anybody that follows their page. So those are the tips on the right. When it says use social media features, that's things that we do. Like every Monday night, we do a cat compliment. People know on Monday night, 6 o'clock, you're getting a cat compliment. That's a feature because it's something that you would do on a weekly or a monthly basis. We're now starting a Wednesday Wow, where we go around and take pictures and feature that out. So those are features. You'll see on the elementary campuses, they've been doing birthday features, which is a good thing. So the parents love that. One of the things that we're struggling with right now is everybody likes putting all the information into an image, which makes it difficult for our Spanish speakers to read them. Unless you have that whole image translated into Spanish. Whereas we've been trying to say, just put a picture of a kiddo and then put your data or your text in the caption so anybody can translate it into anything. We actually have about 7 languages in Splendora ISD, but until they hit that 10%, we don't have to start sending stuff out in that way. But one of the best ways is just to put information like our website. They can translate it into anything that they want to. Facebook allows you to translate it to anything you want to, but you've got to stay away from the imagery of putting everything in English on a picture. So that's one of the things we're working on. We talk a lot about the Facebook algorithm, and no one knows what that could be. But Facebook, they decide they have a little bit too much control, right? So if you start looking for a washer, all of a sudden washers start popping up or whatever. So Facebook monitors you as the end user, what you like, what you engage in, and they how they determine what is going to show up in your feed, right? If you don't, if you just scroll past it, things that like our won't show up in your feed anymore. You don't comment, you don't share, you don't do those things, it'll not show up in your feed anymore. Only because they think, Facebook thinks, you don't like us, you're not engaged with us. So they'll say, oh, that's not, you know, something that you like anymore. So that's why it's important that we tell our social media manager, post 2 to 3 times a day, because if you're not posting that, you're not getting in anyone's feed, and you need to be in their feed so that they can share. That's the big thing. If you see a post of ours, please share it. Because that gives you, I want to say, the most points in the Facebook guru's algorithm. They like that. The other thing that they like, they don't want you to put a link of a video into your post. They want you to actually put the video natively, you know, so when you're going, you see that image and it starts playing. That's what Facebook wants to see. And they put that higher ranking order to show up in your feed. So many things affect the algorithm, and so many things affects insights and the analytics of Facebook. It's mind-boggling. So that is all about the Facebook. Now, this week, so we talked about CTE having their own Facebook page. And we met a couple, 10 days ago, something like that, And we talked to Adam Lira, and Dr. Barnes was there, and we said, hey, if they've got this information, we want to see it, because it helps us all if we're having this information brought to us. And so this past week alone, it was last week, at the high school, they posted about Tyler McShann's welding project on our high school Facebook page. Tons of engagement, tons of likes and shares and love. That's what people want to see. They want to see what our kids are doing in the high school. But I'm afraid if we do a separate page, then you're pulling away from people over here, whereas if you funnel it, you're hitting more people. One of the things that I had shown Dr. Barnes and Adam Lear is that when we had the fair, which was a big group of kids, and they were all the awards and everything, when that information was put on the high school page, it was shared 26 times. The high school has about 2,500 followers, but when they share it, it just blows up. It goes much larger, right? So that tells our story in a different way. You may have heard we had successive twins that only got to that point because people found that engaging. They started sharing it, and that's how people hear our story. So in our regulation that we were talking about, in our social media guidelines that we go to, when we go to visit the campuses, we still urge all of those teachers, push your story to your campus social media manager, or push your story to the district manager, because there are so many guidelines that you have to do if you own your own page. If you're using your personal page to promote our school, you have to be sure that you are following all school guidelines. It's like when you use your phone to text someone about school during school, that becomes subject to open records. You all know this. So when you use your personal social media, it's subject to open records. So if someone says something inappropriate and you don't want that to be reflected on your social media page personally, you better hide it, but you also have to document that you hid it and archive that in case a requester comes and asks you, because you can post mad, you're mad at me, you post something mad, and I, all of a sudden I hide it. Well, guess what? You go back and you reflect and say, I'm going to delete it, it never existed. Well, somebody says, I want to see all the posts that you have hidden or deleted. I have to provide that to them. So it's just one of the things. FERPA guidelines that you have to follow, responding to all comments. Lisa and I are the admin managers for all the campuses, athletics, arts, and the skating rink. So that doesn't mean that we tell them what to post, tell them what to do. That means that if we see a comment out there or if we see a question out there and it sits there, we're making sure that we either answer it or we contact them to say, hey, you've got this question sitting out there. Because we don't want any of our customers or parents to say we're not responsive to their needs. So, hidden comments, so personal Twitter and Instagram, we say those are allowed because those are open accounts and anybody can follow you. But if people are going to use that, they need to tag us. And we found this one has some great pictures, but he was tagging us not the right way or something like that. But I ran across them and I said, hey, I'm going to steal that picture. But we need them to tag us so that we can pull those off and use them on a campus or our own district account, and it just builds the love. So these are the recommendations, or regulation recommendations, say that three times fast, that we are proposing. This is a complementary regulation to your DH policy. This tries to protect the employees from getting into any dialogue with students online or parents online. It just kind of protects them if they're doing open accounts or funneling their information to the campuses.
So you didn't really talk about the parameters that go.
Oh yeah, the parameters. CTE, of course, they have thousands of kids. Our students, there's tons of students in the CTE, tons of students in the fine arts program. If there was to be someone that wants a Facebook page, we would say that person can have a Facebook page, you know. Our only problem with that is that you really have to be dedicated to getting that post up there each day. Otherwise, those things don't live because they're not being in the algorithm, they're not putting in people's feed. Dedicated person to do all that. I still like what he said, we're tweeners, and I think pretty soon we're going to be that big district that'll have a dedicated person at each campus to be able to do that. But right now, most of your social media managers are a secretary or they're a library aide in addition to doing this. And that's really difficult because they're already doing their full-time jobs.
So it's not about controlling what's posted, but we want all of our pages, let's say just for Facebook, we want them to be quality, we want them to be updated, we want people to monitor them. So the opportunity is there for them to have a Facebook page, but if they're not keeping up with it, you know, then it becomes an issue. And we've spent a lot of time over the last 4 years getting things cleaned up and making sure that those groups are not private groups and that, you know, we certainly don't want to inhibit sharing information or recruiting or whatever, but we want to make sure that whatever we put out is quality. So we wanted to provide that history and, you know, talk to you guys about that because it's a full-time job to keep up with that because you don't want something that represents the school district to, you know, not be updated constantly and then it's just a dead page, right? And that's what we had a lot of when we created the communications department. So it's not about chasing engagement, chasing likes, and that kind of thing. It is about telling the story but making sure that we're doing that consistently. We talk a lot about wanting to be consistent and we want to have good processes for doing it. So, y'all have any questions or thoughts?
Does CTE want their own page?
That's what we've been told. Yeah. So,
hey, I'm seeing good things for CTE that's happening around the district. I see the videos that are played.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're living the SFA thing that's, like I just talked about earlier on good things. To me, they have enough, you know, they can push some stuff out there and really be engaged, but that's what we are asking. I mean, is that what they want? I mean, I like to see it that way, but nobody's there to push it, and that's another.
Well, my question is out of fairness. At what point, if they're not now, at what point are they? Or even, or with the not drill team, but like fine art as a whole. If they're not right now, if they're not big enough to say that they can have their own page. At what point do we say they do?
Yeah.
Because we're talking about growth.
Right.
But we're still saying, I mean, we kind of laid out the offer. Y'all got all this news, send it to us. We want to see it. In the past 2 weeks, I received two emails from CTA and what they're wanting to promote. We've put that up, and it's been great. We love the engagement. In that time, too, there's only been two tweets about CTE. And we pull that information off and share it on our pages. I think it's great if they want to do it, but I think it's right now we're at the point we'll funnel it to your campuses because they already have a following. You're already going to see a lot of people. Let them see it. If you create your own page, you have to automatically start building that. As far as recruitment and those kind of things, when you build your own page, the first people that's going to follow your page are the people that are already in your program. And some of the best things that I've seen that they've been putting up lately, like Tyler McShan doing that welding project, that's recruitment. You know, when you see the floral kids making all of those arrangements, that's recruitment. When you see those kids winning all that money and those trophies, that's recruitment. It's when you don't see that on a regular basis and you don't know what's going on, then that's when it's hard to build a program. But if you keep pushing that stuff out there, we're going to keep pushing it on our campus pages and keep pushing it on our district page. I think some of the informational stuff should live somewhere else. When there was an informational video, I think Corey, he did an informational video about things that were coming up. And he sent it to all the people that were in the program. But he really wanted us to promote it on our district site. Well, we've already sent it to your members. This is not going to appeal to people in a day-to-day basis. They want to see those snippets of our kids winning homecoming queen, or not homecoming queen, the fair queen. The little kid, I know it's not an FFA thing, but the little kid that won the junior.
Brandon Allen.
Love, they love that. So when you do all of those things and you keep pushing that in front of the people and say, look at what those opportunities exist. I mean, the vet tech. I would love to see a vet tech picture. Love to see the cosmetology, you know, send us stuff. We engaged them to do the salon menu because they're starting that back up. And it was put on the high school page and shared 70-something times. To get that program and get people into their new salon knots that start back up in November.
But if a program starts it, could the high school share it to still get that rebuilding both pages?
That's right.
Or if they did the CTE page, they put something in the high school share it. The high school page shares it.
For sure.
And then starts building that CTE page.
For sure. But all I'm saying is, like, in the past 2 weeks, I haven't seen that they have that capacity yet. Because I've only, like I said, 4 things in 2 weeks' time.
Teacher, I have several questions. If you have like a booster, so I'll use Project Graduation as an example. If they post photos, how does that correspond with our guidelines for posting photos of children, right? So, you know, you have to sign a release, right? So Project Graduation, they have their big event and they post a bunch of pictures and there's 6 kids in there that a parent had signed a release and said they can't, but yet they're affiliated, but not really?
Well,
how does that?
He's created a whole checklist for our principals that if there's a booster club or a PTO organization, any organization that is affiliated or a support organization of the school, they have to go through a checklist. They're going to have to, their social media guidelines is on there. They have to go through those criminal history checks for all their volunteers, whole list of things that he's reviewed with them.
So there will be guidelines of whether or not they're even a supporting organization first, and then what they can and cannot. Okay, good.
Background checks on volunteers?
Yes. Yeah. We have to do that now. Yeah. Any person that goes on a
booster clubs?
Anybody that's on our campus has to have
any parent volunteer should have to have a background check and has been in the Brenda Duke.
Probably doesn't happen, but
she had worked here in years.
It's now done through the Raptor system. It's online. If you are,
I was just thinking about like. I
mean, know what you're thinking? No, they haven't either.
All right, go ahead.
No. Go ahead, because I think about my other question.
You know where I'm at with it, I'm pretty sure. And the recruiting, you can't reach anybody who's not part of it. So, like, the CTE, so let's say the Tyler McShane page. Those are the kind of things those are great. But how do y'all handle, like, sharing, like, that was a pretty good post. So, how do y'all handle getting that to the district on the district page as well, right? Y'all have the biggest audience of all. And if I have a kid that's coming up, say in junior, I may not be on the high school page.
Right.
And then also for that program, I know we're just in it, and so the fine arts is as well. Mm-hmm. They have students on every campus. So do they share on every campus?
Tag the district.
Tag the district on tweets or anything like that. We're not a big Twitter community.
No.
But here's what we do. We have a spreadsheet every week. And we post, we have 6 campuses. So we are making sure that every campus is represented somewhere in our week, right? So that's 6 posts just for that. Every campus has to have a post per week. So those are 6 posts. In addition, we do the cat compliment. We do a Burt's blog, or we do informational things. We posted something about a media specialist today. So
thank you.
Right. Are we new bus drivers? Are there's a remote learning thing? So in addition to the 6 posts, we do informational posts. Then we'll talk about a Dale Martin thing. So a lot of those things, we will be sure that we don't. We need a high school post this week, but we need it to be academic, or we need a CTE post. So we try to get at least 15 posts per week, at least. We are usually around 18 to 20. So depending on, I mean, we can't just flood the district Facebook with just CTE posts, because that leaves out all those elementary parents. So we're in a balancing mode the whole time of making sure that we have all kinds of things that show all that we are at Spangora. So the CTE doing that, Tyler McShann, is a great tool for our high school to go in and make sure that everybody who hasn't liked their page likes that page. Because you can bet that's a grandparent, that's a community member, that's an elementary parent that saw it somewhere and liked it, but maybe it's not following the high school. So all of those things go into consideration. So
is your, like, your question is how does it get on the district page? So that, how they're looking for those things.
And going to what she said there, where you only have so much room, basically.
Yeah, because if you have, you hit a certain point, the algorithm goes down.
Right. So, in a way, that's kind of, it naturally limits how much exposure any one program throughout the entire district has.
Right.
So if the CT is, or Fine Arts has two or three great things this week, the odds are probably either one or minimal, maybe half of one's going to make it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if I got five things from CTE in a week, I would probably pass out. But yes, probably only a couple would make it to a district page, depending on what it was engaging-wise. But for the high school, they need those posts. They only had six posts all of last week, and all of them were informational except for the three CTE posts. Everything else was informational. So we're begging for that meeting.
So can y'all not mandate?
Mandate what?
The high school, each campus, that any program that you have needs to be posting this many per week,
sure.
Just like what you have.
I mean, I wouldn't mandate it, because I don't have that authority over that social media manager or those booster or those programs.
So,
I would love
only,
to do
you
it.
You said there's only six, three were informational, three were CTE.
These are secretaries. I was going to ask about that too.
Athletics has a Facebook.
Athletics has their own page.
So we can create. That's what we're saying. We're just trying to make sure that we have consistency.
We need to have capacity and those people who are going to be able to send that information, every week.
And there's the option for them to create for FFA and CTE or CTE and band to create that. That's what we're talking.
The CTE and Fine Arts has the opportunity.
Yeah. So that's what.
I mean, and if you, so, I go look at the CTE Twitter page and see what they've posted lately.
I know. Yeah. I just think if you.
I
didn't realize that athletics had one. But.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, though. That's where I'm saying, out of fairness,
I agree.
Whatever the guidelines are, that's what applies to everybody. If you're going to post eight times a week or 10 times a week, you can have your own page. If you don't, post it on the high school page.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing, is trying to be consistent and fair and bring that to everybody.
And that's kind of what I was saying. Hey, Adam, if y'all have all this news, show me. Because I saw CNA and I saw the fair from the beginning of school up to the time we had that meeting. I had not received anything else since then.
That's where it seems, as a community, as a district, we're going to tell our story. Mm-hmm. And if they're not posting, they're not doing their job, right? I mean, kind of. Not posting, but we need to be able to do that.
It's sometimes difficult. I'm involved in a heavy-duty lesson. Hold up, let me get a post.
That's what I was going to touch base on. Is really when you've got extra, not extra people. I'm not saying coaches are extra or anything like that. I'm not, trying to suggest that. But when you've got, say, a staff of 20 who, has some downtime, you're going to get more posts from athletics than you're going to get from the high school. We're constantly, they're busy, until we have time to say this is your full-time job or this is your part-time job, we'll take these other jobs away, we're never going to get.
That's saying we're like a tweener, because we don't have a person that's been dedicated half-time to go around to those places and say, and that's what we do on Wednesdays. We go to those places that we haven't seen before. Which cosmetologists pull that
from? One thing that I would add to this, though, is when you're talking, most of these people have student organizations that include a reporter position. It doesn't have to be a teacher.
That's excellent.
Right. FFA has a reporter. Right. Junior FFA has a reporter. Cosmetology has a reporter that competes at Skills USA level. Hell, Construction Trades has a reporter that competes at that level. So this doesn't have to be adult-led.
Right.
But it just has to be adult accountable.
Yes.
And that starts either at the top or at the bottom. But
I think it just comes more important as we get closer to the bottom, right? People like to see that their kids are coming out of school.
Yep, and that's another one that we're dedicated to doing right now. Every month we put a construction post out. Every month we put a safety post out. So we want people to know that their money's being spent well. We want them to know that kids are being safe. And we want to see them all the good things that are going on. So when you look at all of it, you know, that's what we're not just limited to those six posts per week. Yeah. Our Gears kids did the same thing that you're talking about, but it was put into a queue. And that still required someone to go in, make sure it was felt right, make sure that the picture was PERPA approved, that those kids were approved, and then you can push it out as an approval process. So it wasn't a queue.
Can I ask you about the website, too? Because I think that's the place that most people are going to go. If they're going to buy a home out here and they want to find something out about the district, they could look at the paper and look at our ratings. We don't want that. We want them to go to the website. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another key thing, too, to have some of those, you know, to be able to have. I know we do. I think we do a pretty good job of that. So we also can flash pictures and things like that for them to go for more information and connections to the Facebook of each area if they want more info.
I think
social media.
I think CTE or FFA has their own Google site page.
So that could be another place.
Well, it's
actually
attached to our website.
See, and I think that's the other point, too. They could go to different places. And to me, at the website is the first, is, you know, if they want to find out something about the district, you know, they're going to go to the website.
Let me just jump in. My communications department is 30 years old. I mean,
it's
a lot of work. You know what I mean? We're just, some of the stuff we're trying, and you know, I know I've got her doing community-based accountability work. I mean, she's involved in Friesland, and so they work their butts off trying to get. So it's not. I mean, it's not about. And when you have as social media continues to explode, there's more and more regulation that come on the district, and so it is a task just to keep up with all that. I'm not saying we don't want to open these accounts, but we need to have the capacity to run them well. And so that's all we're saying.
There's
an option now. Yeah.
They look fantastic.
And they do a phenomenal job of telling our story. Can we get better at that? Absolutely. Right? And I think that's, but it's kind of, as Dan Huber said the other day about fund balances, we only need to be rowing in the same direction. And now we have an opportunity for additional Facebook pages to be created. And it goes. And you're right. It's our job to make sure that those people are doing their job and telling that story. So, you know, we have now opened that for them, and it's up to them to promote that. But the more we have out there, because I'm telling you, when we started this, and I think just two, three of y'all on the board, when we started the communications department, we had Facebook groups everywhere, and it was.
We have a booster club for everything. We have a Facebook booster club for everything. We have, you know, all of these outside things, but sometimes that message doesn't get funneled up to where you're going to get the biggest bang for your post.
There's a part to it as well. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we live by the motto, more than a score, and pushing some of this stuff. I mean, I like what Dan said. I mean, you know, we need to make it almost like we need to engage these to let the community know, whether it be at the CTE page and then get shared, if, you know, athletics get shared. I think it's a group effort. Group effort amongst everybody.
It is.
Whether it be, each one be able to share each other's face, so that way we get it out.
Well,
I mean, if we're going to say that we're more than a sport, then it's,
unfortunately, over the past 6, 7, 8 months, it's been responsive. It's been, people are mad about this, so we're responding to that. So trying to get back to that point.
Some of our Facebook pages actually have a new screen that have the other Facebook groups posts show up in that stream. So you can have a new stream as well.
I appreciate y'all expanding the opportunity.
Yes, just don't be like Greg. I like Greg Long, he's a friend of mine, but we don't need to know every time they dig a ditch. That's their job, I mean.
Well, and you look at the other, and I'll say this as we transition to Joe, but you see how it can go wrong?
Yeah.
That's why we no longer have a police Facebook page?
Well,
no, I mean,
yeah.
Okay. What's that? Well, I mean,
especially since that job got way bigger than ditches.
Yeah. So, anyway, thank you, Beecher. Thanks, all for all the hard work.
And I'm glad we got Facebook for the ride home, because if we didn't, we'd be standing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't ever check my Facebook.
I've been on it checking about once a week.
Mm-hmm.
All
right.
I've seen the study that says it increases.
Forgot where I'm at.
Depression.
Joe, you're up, buddy.
All right.
Good news, Joe, right? All good news.
It's all good news.
No?
If you guys would like a written copy of this, we can get that for you, but we've got the presentation on board. Joe, if you want me to run me your banner, I'll be glad to, or you can flip through it all you want.
If you want to change pages, that'd be great.
Okay.
I have a hard time keeping up sometimes, so we don't need the disclosure. This just basically says we really don't know until we sell bonds what we're going to get.
Question would be, do we need a whole lot of overview on IFANEPDA? Maybe for new board members?
Yes.
I think the takeaway that I really want to have you get is the state has two ways that they will participate in funding facilities. One is instructional facilities allotment. The other is existing debt allotment. Instructional facilities allotment, they don't come very often. Last time they came with a cycle was 2016. We got some of that. We were very fortunate. Prior to that, it had been another 5-6 years since they had done a cycle. The difference is there's limitations on existing debt allotment that if you happen to get instructional facilities allotment, you're outside of that limitation. And we'll talk about the limitation in a second. But instructional facilities allotment is just that. It is only for instructional facilities. So there are a number of rules. It goes really well if you happen to be building a new school. When they do a cycle, like we were last time, it just worked out that we were able to get that. IFA never goes away. You get it for as long as your bonds are outstanding. EDA has a limit. It's that bottom assistance. Assistance is limited currently to 29 cents of interest and sinking fund tax effort. And they have a guaranteed yield formula that they apply, which you'll see. That's why state and local assistance changes over time. From year to year, how much the state is going to participate changes. So that does it. That's, I really,
one quick question on IFA. Is it limited to how many pennies you can get the IFA?
You get the IFA based on your ADA times $250 at the time that your application goes in. So when we submit an application, we multiply $250 times your ADA, that caps your participation limit.
With whatever we have existing also?
On whatever our new application
on
is.
On that new series.
Yeah, once you're in at that eligible amount. Right, so good question, and that'll show up here in another slide.
It's 250 times ADA every time you turn in an application, which obviously, like I said, there was twice in 5 years that even was out there.
So this is just a graph of your debt and what is currently being paid from IFA and EDA or eligible. So the bottom blue is the IFA debt, and the red, of course, then would be what's being assisted with existing debt allotment, and as it turns out, for the debt that's eligible, it's about one-third of your debt is eligible and receiving IFA, and the other two-thirds is getting existing debt allotment. This is your current eligibility on your bonds. So you see the IFA limitation there? That's how much of your debt out of those series are eligible for instructional facilities allotment. And then it gets applied against the state share, local share, which is recalculated annually. So that moves every year. And we'll talk about the primary drivers of that in a moment. But then down below, any debt that is above the IFA limitation, like your 2016A and 2016B, when we're doing the application, some parts of a school are eligible for IFA, some are not, instructional facilities thing. So anything that's not an instructional facility gets rolled into non-eligible debt, but it will be picked up by existing debt allotment.
And this is one of those areas where we took a bath on this current year values, that state share piece.
This is, I went in and looked at the current year debt service budget based on where we stood for this year, just to see. Remember, TRV, or tax rate election, we did a swap, right? A rate swap. Those are forbidden now under the new state law that came out, and we've been kind of working through when are we going to be away from that? When is the debt service going to pay for itself? This year. This is it. So that last transfer of unencumbered balance is a drawdown of general fund balance. That doesn't apply this year. It did when I had calculated this earlier on the earlier summary of finances, but the one that they posted October 21st, we cleared. You see that we start with your debt service requirement, $6.6 million. Your interest in sinking fund balance, or what's in your debt service fund from your taxes to pay debt as our beginning balance. Your budgeted amount, the $4,032,000. If you look down, your local levy at your certified value is $3,932,000. Your budget rightfully picks up delinquent payments of prior year taxes, penalty and interest, all those things that you get to count and that the state looks at when they're looking at state funding. So $4,032,000, probably a little conservative. Again, our existing debt allotment, state share that's going to come in, estimated instructional facilities allotment. Now that is less than what you will see or what you saw on that prior page. The reason for that is we have not seen the refunding that we did in 2020 post for state funding yet. It's still sitting there pending. That, I think what they were waiting on is once we turn in our applications, they look through and wait for it to appear in an audit. TEA really runs off of audited figures, so that was sent in. If we don't see it by the end of December or so, I'll pick up the phone and ask them what's going on. That will push you even more to the good, and the takeaway really from that is we're off the swap. The swap is now gone away because of the growth in value and what you're producing. This is the real driving page, okay? When we're looking at what's gonna produce your capacity, it's this page right here, the table of future student growth where we calculate your local share. It's based on, if you look at column B, comptroller state value. When the state's doing state aid, they come up with their own figure on a statewide basis, giving the same exemptions to every piece of property across the entire state. then you set a tax based on C, your local value. You'll see there's a little bit of lag in that. Then your ADA is really important in calculating the share. Column B and column D are the most important numbers in calculating what the state share is going to be. So what we did with this is we grew your values in column B and C by 10% each year. Right, this year I think you were 13% growth. You pretty consistently have been hitting some pretty high growth, and from the sounds of things, that's not going to slow down. Your ADA column has been growing, or we have that growing at 200 students per year. Okay, if the growth in your ADA increases and the growth in value decreases, you're going to see a shift back to more coming from the state and less from the local share. It really is, which is growing faster, students or value? Because remember, state funding is based on wealth per student. But the formulas are driven towards wealth per student. So if you're becoming wealthier per student, it's going to be more on your local share.
Wow, that's getting close to 100% of local share.
You know, that's a big 79%. That's a big problem. There are districts out there that a lot of them now, more and more, are getting that way, becoming wealthy districts.
Is it their value?
Oh, yeah.
Montgomery is way up there.
Values are going up. And remember, we talked about that, we talked about it before, is that the values outpace our student growth and the state share drops. I mean, that's
what's the value per home that has to be to equal even the state share?
I don't know the answer for that.
I think it's like, it was $350,000 or something like that. Per student, I think it was.
This is just crazy.
Statewide issue.
The guaranteed yield, did you mention what that guaranteed yield was?
$35 per penny on existing debt allotment. It doesn't exist necessarily for IFA. Because IFA, you get, when you go in to get it, you get your slice of the pie at the time you're going through the application process, and if you're awarded it, you get awarded based on your ADA times $250, and that's your cap of value. And then it's just that calculation, and you'll split between state and local based on that fixed dollar amount.
Good.
Okay, so your existing debt, there's a few things that are driving your existing debt, or that will drive the existing debt. One is going to be your break points, which if you look at the chart there, in 2024, we have the largest break point. In 2030, there's a break point, and it goes back up. That's that 2 years of the 2002 issue that remain outstanding, which, as you may recall, those get IFA, and with IFA, there's the rule that they have that once you've done two refundings, that's all you get. On the third time, the state has the option of pushing that over into existing debt allotment. So again, that's the one that we've left, and the goal is to buy those down with cash at the appropriate time. So you've got the break points. You see the 3 years before we fall. I'm not even considering that IFA is going to be an option, right? If it is, great. But what we have to do with EDA in order to qualify is August 23rd, so that last year before we fall, we have to have the debt not only outstanding, but we have to have a payment on it in the fiscal year ending August 31, 2023, and that's state fiscal year, but that's the state gives out their state aid based on an August 31. So we need, you know, by having the payment in there, we're going to qualify that issue for existing debt allotment, and then we get to take advantage of that drop, right? Because we would have levied, see, we're EDA payments in there, and we would have levied debt for EDA, which means when we have qualified debt that comes in, we get to continue that eligibility on tax rate. It I hate to call it a game, but it's almost, you know, you just have to know their rules and how to stay between the lines with state funding here. So that will cover that. Anything above that, and it will be questionable as to whether or not we'll be that on our dime or that we'll get it matched with state funding. Okay, so estimate of future bond capacity. You know, we talked about the value of future value and student growth, and so to the extent we're accurate with that, then we're going to be accurate with our projection. Interest rate, I used 3.75% for 20-year bonds. You'd be down, if we were selling right now today, you'd be down around 2% on 20-year debt, AAA, BSF guarantee, with an A-plus underlying. That's where that debt is selling right now. We'll see. We don't expect, you know, after the election, we think there's going to be a little bump, and then things will settle down. And by the time we get out a couple years, the gurus who try and look out that far are saying that's probably about the time that we'll be back fully going with our economy again post the pandemic. Target tax rate I used was 43 cents just to keep our tax rate right where it is, and then how much could we issue with that. And what really drives your debt service is going to be the interest rate that we get, 3.75, the tax rate that we set, 43 cents. 50 cents is the limit, okay? That's it. We can't get through the Attorney General's office with a tax rate above 50 cents. There's some sleight of hand you can do with Tier 2 money, but you've got to be very careful with that. And then your taxable assessed valuation. So those are really the only three things driving what your capacity is going to be. So that's why, you know, if it was all on your own and with no state aid, you can kind of look back at the prior pages and go, well, we'd have to pick up, you know, an additional $2 million in debt service. And that can be difficult. So though the state is going down and what they help, they are helping some. And that brings you to $44 million. Is what it looks like your capacity is going forward. And, you know, again, this is something that we're going to have to continue to monitor and look at and change as we go. The difficult part for it all is going to be, when are the students going to come in? The value's going to lag, just because taxable value, it's set January 1, it's supposed to be, right? So when we hit January 1 of 2021, whatever's on the ground is what's taxable. And so there's a lag time in what gets built, because, you know, the houses that are coming online before January 1, 2022, people will buy and kids will start coming to school, and you're going to lag in value. And once this thing really starts taking off like a wildfire, that's when the crunch really comes. But the state also has some help to provide for fast growth districts. So
we are eligible. We have been the last 2 years. Fast growth money.
So even if we went to the maximum 50 cents, that's only what, that's about a 10%. I think you're around 50 million.
Yeah, I think you'd be up around 50, maybe a little bit more than 50 at a 50 cent tax rate. And certainly, you know, that's, you know, we'll take a look at all of that. This just kind of gets you into the thinking pattern of, you know, what's our spread going to be.
Before you start the fight at 43 cents, you can do that. And then after you start the fight,
That 43 cents though keeps us flat where we're at, right?
Right.
We're not even asking. We're just asking if you keep paying what you're paying.
That's right. And all we have to do is fight the.
So we were just asking for a 7 cent increase. Yeah. If we wanted to max out.
Yeah. That's right.
Which when you get into that fast growth, you don't have an option. You just got to talk your way through it.
Well, I'm just looking. I mean, I'm thinking. In my mind, we need an elementary and a junior high, and there's still a big hole there.
Yes.
Well, because we've got to look further than 2023 as well, right?
You got the models that are going to start dropping off. If you look at that chart.
Right. So then the capacity will be there for...
As they fall off.
When we get in that fast growth, that'll be your only relief. I mean, we'll have to go to that 50 cents, and we'll be there for quite a while.
Right, because your next drop-off isn't until 2030, right? That's your last year, and then you drop down.
For 7 years.
7 years, that's what's going to be hard, right?
And it's not a real big drop-off. So
that was those 30-year notes stacked on top of each other.
That's kind of what I was worried about, because that 7 years is critical. I mean, 2023 is very soon. You know, yes, I mean, like we should start building now, get ready for that. But then thinking about those 7 years, that's where we could.
Last bond before 2016.
12.
So basically 5 year. Will they be on quicker cycle?
Series 11s or 12? 11s.
We refinanced. O2s that were, and that's the O2s that are still.
O2s, that's only
$31 million.
But between those 2 years of O2s, you're looking at a little less than $3 million.
I think it's 1.9. I'm wondering if we should push principally here.
The price. Top of that?
I don't know.
You're going to have that discussion again.
You can't push it out. Because you got to pay that first payment. Now, you can slow build. Or how long after you pass a bond do you have to sell it?
5 years without getting into a contest with accountability issues, correct? You can go out beyond that, but you've got to explain yourself.
Once, are you talking about the initial issuance, or once you sell bonds and you have the proceeds, how long do you have to spend them? Or are you talking, pass a bond election, how long to issue?
Say the voter approval then.
Okay, you don't really have a strict limit on that. The AG will look at that, and you probably would have 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and they would honor and say that voter approval is still a good... And I can't see that you would vote something and not sell it. Usually, you vote something in 3 to 5 years, you've sold it all.
If we voted early, could we get 2.5% interest rate now?
You have to sell them at that. What do you vote?
You
get that 2.5%.
You'd have to vote them and sell them right away, and the only issue with that becomes. You've got to, one, pay for it between now and then, which, you know, without IFA, you don't have a payment. You'd have to get a payment in by 8/31/21, right, to be eligible for anything that you paid. It would be I think you would find that that would be more than you could handle, because you'd only have 7 cents that you could levy for. So you wouldn't get that big of a bang.
2.5% and 3.5%. What would you yield that you could spend a bank?
I'm not sure I understand the
rates right now are 2.5%, right?
Yeah, even lower than that on 20-year debt.
Right. And we're already saying we need to buy land.
We're at all-time lows, but the problem then becomes how much can you issue, how much can you approve and then issue? You might be able to do some for buying land or something of that nature, but you're going to have to levy a tax for it before the end of 8/31/21, which, what is... months from now. I mean, it seems like a long way off, but the end of next summer, the end of that fiscal year is here before you know it. You would have May to have an election. And can you really properly prepare for an election in May?
Considering how many people are refinancing their homes, I think it might be I'd have to look and see. Before I even go down that road, I'd have to say, what can you get at current rates versus, and I get it, we're shooting in the dark when we're shooting at rates 3 years from now, but there are projections.
Run the risk of another election and the bond not passing and then
return to school. No, then you wait 2 years and you come back and get the 3.5%. But if you get it at 2.5% instead of 40 million, you might have 60 million.
You know, I don't know that you'd go up that much, but it is a driving, the interest rate is a driving force, the term is a driving force, because you look at 20 versus 25 versus even a 30, a lot of times the argument is, what does the yield curve look like? We've been seeing a pretty flat yield curve out long, which means usually you see rates going up, right? Like a stair step as you go. Then what happens out on the long end is they tend to flatten out, and that's basically telling you the market is not charging you sometimes to go from 21 or 20 years to 23. You know, that's same rate. And those are some of the things that you know, we look at when we sell, because that can be, hey, you know, if you want to stretch it out and pick up a few more million out of your voted amount, the market's not charging you to do that right now. And you still keep a short call option prepayment, so you may be able to refinance. But those are all structuring issues that really, the takeaways for tonight that I really want you to remember, and we can deal with drilling down into it, is you've got your tax rate, whatever your assessed value is, and your tax rate limit, your TAV, taxable assessed value, your tax rate, are the big drivers, interest rate, term of your bond. Not a whole lot we can do with that when you go to market. That's going to set your capacity, because you're capped at the 50 cents, right? You get the state aid, which helps buy down from the 50 cents for now, and as that shift happens, whichever way it goes, it impacts your future debt capacity. And you're right that we, right now, we're just looking at what can we do in 2023/2024. But from the sounds of things, we do need to be looking and forecasting out much further than that. And I understand y'all will be doing a demographic study, which is exactly what we need in order to do long-term planning, because even with this, it becomes very difficult to hit the mark.
How often do you need demographic studies to keep you in the planning phase?
You know, I think the fast growth districts and the demographers can probably tell you better than I can how often you need it. But I would think that's a function of what's the absorption of the lots in your developments. You know, if you have one that's taken off, but the others aren't, that's one thing. But when they all start taking off, you know, like you see down the road from you.
They're here.
It's, yeah, but it takes a while for land to go from raw to planning to somebody really putting the money in.
That's what I thought. But in 2 months, we've had 90 homes added here and 20 there and 20 there. I mean, I always thought we'd get one, maybe two going at the same, but we've got four catching fire at the same time. And the only way to address that long, I mean, I didn't come in here with this in mind, but the only way to get in front of something is to go. I mean, you can sit and wait, and you're farther and farther behind. But
you got to be in front.
The only way to get in front is go. I mean, we structured it so 2023 was an ideal point where we can sell a debt and say no tax increase. That was the whole goal. I mean, mm-hmm.
I think the next move we make, you're going to have to seriously consider going to 50 cents. The
last one was 2017.
And it's not a hard sell right now because everybody just seen the tax decrease. You're only asking for 7 cents. We're not asking for 50.
Yeah.
Because they're paying 43. So it's not a hard sell. I don't think it's a hard sell. I mean,
Joe, what's the likelihood of the state having another, the additional money that we had in 2016, the additional IFA, but that additional allowance, not just specific, there was a term to...
IFA.
No, yes, IFA, but there was a specific term for that overage that year, and that hadn't happened in the previous 7 years or what have you.
Instructional facilities law, IFA. That's the IFA law. Yeah, that's what we got on the
16th. You haven't had one since.
Oh, yeah, I know there hasn't been one since, but what is the likelihood of...
5 years prior to that. Either.
Right, exactly.
Joe, you jump in, but considering the state is saying we have massive deficits, I don't think they're going
to
be saying...
So that's kind of where I'm going is what is the likelihood, and I apologize, I had to run over to the high school for a minute, but what is the likelihood of another opportunity like that in today's climate? Slim to none?
I don't see it happen. I honestly don't.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect, but I wanted to ask the question.
Oil prices are down. That's a huge revenue for the state.
Because my thought there was, would there be any reason for us to maybe hold out a little bit? Because I apologize for coming back in. Are you thinking we need to push even sooner? I mean, well, November 2021 is... I mean, that takes that long to really start getting the marketing and everything out there. So
I would tell you, after looking at the numbers and considering the current interest rates, I want to see what 2.5%, 2% would yield instead of 3.5%. But everybody around, I mean, everybody's been refinancing their mortgages.
Sure, yeah.
It's
obvious,
right?
Yeah.
So when you go, if we wanted to go fast and go early,
that's your selling point.
You say, hey, this is historic lows. I mean, we want to jump on it. Land prices, we're all sitting here talking about land prices went from 18,000 to 65,000 an acre. I mean.
Yeah. But do we even have the, I'm so sorry.
We have 7 cents available right now to move up. But if you go ahead and sell the debt, I mean, you can sell the debt out for 20 years. You can go ahead and get the cash. Just like, I mean, yeah. We've sat on our current bond. Mm-hmm. We didn't start building. We sold all that debt. We didn't start building for 2.5 years. I'd feel a lot better sitting on it at 2% interest than waiting and turning around and having to pay 4. You're going to pay more in interest.
Did the last bond pass by 7 or 8 votes?
9 votes.
So I think we'd have a better outcome. We've got to be smart about it now.
The last bond was also rushed through because of that additional money, and we found out, and there were certain criteria that you had to accomplish to be able to get that additional money. You had to pass the bond in that year. You had to make your first payment in that year. You had to be one of the lower socioeconomic districts. and it wasn't even guaranteed that, but we felt pretty sure. But there were certain criteria that we had to reach, and we rushed it for because of that, because we thought, hey, we're going to, and we did. We got that additional $7 million or whatever. So we had to really rush it through. And yeah, there was a lot of, there wasn't a real strong alignment at the time. So it took a lot to get those 9 votes, but again, we've rushed it through. So if you're looking at next November and you have an opportunity to show these demographics, and you, now you've got houses being built, and you've got Timberlakes over there and those homes already being built, now you can show the growth. Whereas back then we kept saying, but it's coming, it's coming. And people were like, well, where is it? And do you really? And at the time, we also were looking at Peach Creek being 5th and 6th grade campus, and not everybody loved that idea. And so it was a hard sell. I don't think it would be such a hard sell now, and especially thinking, going with Dan's comments there, I don't think that we could get a bond together before May, and I honestly wouldn't want to rush it like that. But in November of 2021.
Here's what you got to lose.
That was tough, Dan. That was tough. It was 9 votes.
We're going to go 2023. So if we went early.
Yeah, that was tough to push that bond through in that few.
We made political blunders.
Well, there were for sure.
But that's why I think about the telling our story part. Because I know there's a faction of our town that doesn't like what we're doing, but what they also don't know what we're doing is why. Right. So, just go
ahead. Well, and I think, with what happened in Cleveland, people don't like the growth, and so they push it back on the district. I mean, when they say, I don't like the growth that's coming, but then the district's punished for that. So, is that kind
of Cleveland also tried to push a $250 million bond when they only had $125 million worth of capacity.
But
their
previous
bond was like in the low 80s? Yeah.
But when people go to vote, essentially, that's kind of, sometimes they don't even look at the money.
I agree. I don't even think they always see this.
They just go, I don't like this. If I don't vote for it, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's right. It's
how
just
do they like it
that.
Now? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's so. I hang out with simple people, so I kind of understand their minds.
You're so funny.
You're talking about I am the same person.
Thank you, Joe.
You bet. Well, thank you.
I'll be back with you tomorrow. We can run whatever you need.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for bearing with us in our first part.
I find it fascinating, and I wish I could have said we have 120 million capacity. That would have been closer to
what we need, right?
What is our capacity? 44 million? Is that what it's all?
At 43 cents.
Oh, I thought
you were
44 million.
44 million.
Get down.
More of Kevin.
I mean,
it is.
We got more of you.
Thank you,
Joe. Chop it off right now.
All right.
We got a proverb. Most of what we have here is just kind of bits and pieces. The one thing I think we do need to talk about for 1 second is going to be the committed fund balance conversation in lieu of the new stump speech that we have out of Dan Huberty about there being $15 billion in fund balance in our Texas public schools. And with that kind of conversation, our thoughts are that he's running for another piece of that office, and that's part of it. So he's playing nice with the anti-public ed guys because he's one of the biggest public ed guys we have. And for him to change face and start talking like that, he's got an agenda. The one thing I'll just tell you, that if you look back at our audit and what we did on fund balance, what we have committed in this budget for our construction projects, to be honest, it's really not much of an issue because we don't have much over our 3 months operating going to be left at the end of this budget cycle because we've spent, we've got $99.75 million worth of projects in this budget, and hopefully we'll see quite a bit of savings on that, but that's what we have budgeted.
Sorry, what did you? How much did you just say?
$9,750,000.
Okay, I thought you said $97 million. I'm like, that's not possible.
Awesome.
I'm like, wait, what?
That's a Biden speech.
Sorry, I was like, wait, that's not possible, Gavin. Okay,
basically,
$9 million.
That leaves us with $14 million.
And that's just
give or take, depending on what we garner out of this year's budget through savings and such.
So I'm just going to say, if ADA doesn't come up here and the new formula from TEA, we don't take a hit again on that, ballparking $14 million, our 3 month supply is somewhere in the 12.5 to 13 million, taking out some of our construction payments and such. So, as you know, for I guess all intents and purposes, that's not a bad thing, that our, at least our money's committed. And that's probably less of a worry than some of these guys that have a bunch more of that $15 billion to worry about.
But it is a worry, though, Kevin, if, and I apologize, if, you know, we know that the field is going to need upkeep, and we know these different things that we don't have. That is committed. Okay, okay.
We've committed $1 million to those projects already.
Okay, okay.
And any savings that we see will go back on that committed fund balance policy that y'all met on Monday night.
Okay.
Do we have any real-life savings yet on any of our...
We haven't had that meeting yet. Contractors, Duratec, Fieldstock were there. You know, we reduced contingencies way early in the project on Timber Lakes by $500,000. So there's $500,000 already realized. But the actual get down to the hard number yet, no, we haven't gotten it yet.
Did we have it on our fields, on our anything? What did we save on our fields? Anything?
I have to look back. We've never had a project since I've been in that office that hasn't saved money. The last 11 bonds we talked about earlier, which was the addition to the junior high and the high school work, we saved $865,000 on that project. So,
in the elementaries, did we have any savings? We're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
Not there yet.
So none of those are included in the
correct.
Rest. But anything on the fields would have already been included in
correct.
The
rest. Yeah, that's already in the bank. I can go back and look at that.
If you can just see that. I mean, I'd like to know just for information.
So it's good. I guess are we clear on what the committed fund balance is? I thought we were going to earmark more specifically.
We are. And that was in that resolution Monday night that y'all approved. It was the shelf life, 10% a year of the shelf life. So...
And we're going to continue doing that going
as
forward.
As long as we have fund savings coming out of the budget into fund balance, yes. Okay. That is our commitment. Again, budget concerns, you'll just see there, we talked about earlier, land acquisitions, the biggie, obviously, topic of the night. And then we want to try to stay competitive in our salary and compensation to all staff. And as you forecast down the future, that's going to be a tough one. That's going to be a tough one. And especially since the state sets our M&O budget now, our M&O tax rate, we don't have a lot of say-so there. We gather all those TRE pennies, and that sure helps us. But when they're setting our MCR, tax rate's kind of a non-issue.
All districts will be under this. So it's not like we're going to be any different from anybody.
Everybody's getting it.
But if they were already above us.
So... Well, yeah.
I mean, if they were already, you know, New Caney.
We just got to stay.
They can't outpace us.
Right. Can't outpace us. But if they were already, you know, 8% higher, which I'm making a number up, but.
That's probably not far off.
Barbara's
salary and compensation, is that instead of doing like a 3% deal, can we do that with stipends? Or when you say, hey, you know, you have some teachers that are way above and beyond, and you give one across the board, it's 3%. But you got some of them that are doing awesome and they deserve an 8%. You got some of them that aren't really performing, so do you give them a raise? Can you do it with them?
That's what we can't. You can't do a performance raise, but that's what that the teacher incentive is to kind of incentivize those that go above and beyond.
Which is
going away.
There's a TED talk about motivation.
Yeah.
In schools, and it's motivation not just in schools, but in creative work. And be careful chasing the measure. Be careful. It's not only that it doesn't work; it's actually detrimental to what you're trying to.
I'd like to, if you find that, send that. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, that's what I'm watching. I understand what you're saying. It's just not as easy as that because we're not going to measure giving them additional money for it. I mean,
What's your metric? You know?
So Dallas tried to do something several years ago.
Well, that's what the state is saying. Let's look at what Dallas is doing.
Yeah, that, like, they've got the master. Yes.
Replicate that.
You
know.
And, well, and
that's the push.
That's not a bad teacher. I mean, we helped us.
I'm not totally against what they did.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to understand it more, and I guess it sounds like we're gonna understand it more.
Big scale, would you do that for us?
If you're paying the best to teach the hardest to teach, and that technically that's what the Dallas model is, then it's hard to argue that.
Yeah.
The best teachers want to be with the easiest ones to teach. You know, senior English is case in point for everybody's senior year. The best teacher was always teaching the seniors, but. Other than that, staffing, Brian probably will cover some of that, but staffing always. I know he is going to be on top of looking at staffing audits and different aspects of our staffing. I know Dr. Burke wants to make sure that we continue to keep an eye on our assistant principals. That's just one small piece of it, and make sure that they're appropriately priced and appropriately compensated. My concerns now, especially through the rezoning and the COVID and all that, is knowing that our campuses are, I don't want to say equal because they're all different, but I want to make sure that they're staffed appropriately from the ground up. You know, Brad has worked tirelessly on the teaching staff, and this next focus is going to be to our paraprofessionals and such, and we just got to make sure that we are as equally light or as equally heavy on each campus as we can. We continue to go forward. And with this COVID deal.
And it's not just teaching staff and campus staff. You have to think about, as we continue to grow.
Special education.
No, not just that, but your operations staff.
Oh, yeah.
Your
drivers.
You know. Like maintenance staff. So how much savings could we get if we go to a 4-day work week? So you don't have to run buses. You don't have to run the cafeteria. I mean.
With that conversation.
I think people would love
you. Stay home Monday or Friday.
If you did that.
I like months.
Yeah.
I'm good. So much up. Stuff work. But my deal is I just don't think you can adequately shut
down. I
don't
think off the table.
There's too much extracurricular.
It's not time of year.
Yes. You're correct. It's
working conditions. Yeah.
Because that could be the...
We just go all canvas.
Did it cost us a lot? I mean, I know it cost us some additional, but... And putting the sixth grade back on the elementary campuses, because now you have to have a art teacher or what have you, or
not
a band.
Not as much
and
as we would have had to spend to build another campus. I think
one of the biggest impacts were
art band.
Right. I mean, I knew that there were additional teachers that, you know, we had to hire, obviously, because now we have sixth grade over there. I'm just curious
really,
what...
But teacher-wise, you don't, because you're still 21 or whatever, whether you're here...
No, but we did that.
Yeah.
We actually did have to add some positions.
Not in your extracurriculars. When you start getting like that, you're getting in some of those one-offs. But over time, those things are going to fill up, or should.
Yeah.
But where we had two band guys at the junior high, now we have two extra.
Yeah, I knew we had to add some positions.
We got one that transfers here, so we did it about as cheaply as you could.
No, and I'm not asking. Yeah, I'm just curious what that
actually going for really well.
Dan, I sent a few of those links out on that 2.5%.
I was just curious.
Still,
like that,
Leo Lopez, the
was a
head
kid,
finance
you know,
guru, was adamant on saying that's not a cap on revenue. It's a cap on the increase of your tier one allotment.
Well,
I just knew that we had added positions.
Yeah, and that's the way I'm starting to see it.
It's still a cap on revenue. He just made an oversight.
Well, not really, because the revenue is matched by the state.
But they make up the difference.
So that's even better for
new
our bond.
Terrible.
Yeah, that's helping percentage.
Is that with us?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you'll get to it. Sorry.
Because that's why we had a bigger cut than we anticipated, right? On our M&O?
Correct. That 95%. Basically, the 5% reduction is what it was. Okay. Dr. Barnes, unless y'all have any more questions.
I had one, and it really is not... But a little while ago, Dietra mentioned the skating rink. Is the skating rink back open? I didn't think it was.
We are having conversations about when to reopen facilities for rental and things like that. That's
I'm just going to tell you, I think that's liability the district doesn't even worry about until this current situation.
Okay. I was just, when she said that a little while ago, I was like, oh, wait, is it dawned on me or occurred to me that there's probably nothing going on at the skating rink, right? I mean,
so now, and when, to here, be honest, no, I got when you. Those, all I got those you. Laptops are
bring it to you.
That's where they'll be staged at retro.
Thank you.
So the 1.4
million we lost in ADA, that was solely the
It wasn't solely in ADA. That it was the ESSER funds, the pass-through.
I've seen that.
The ESSER that the feds were sending to us, well, they just deducted it from our FSP payment.
Okay.
TA did.
There you go, man. Yeah.
You got you on what?
There's no, these FAPs and SRGs and stuff.
IFAs and the MNOs and the...
We're 1.4 million short.
Okay.
Okay, I'm still a big fan of stipends as motivation raises. I'm just throwing that out.
I think for those spots that have additional work, proves additional work.
No, yeah. I think you have to be a little careful with stipends, Jason, honestly, because you can end up with one person.
If they ain't worth value, then you find a way to get them a raise. If they ain't worth the...
Well, yeah, no, I don't disagree.
The value of that under who, you know, that's
not every,
bigger.
Not every class is the same.
Yeah. Right, that's right. Mm-hmm. And some things you're governed to have to, you have to have. But
because her kids score lower and she's working less, that's the kind
no,
of
No, but that's still, I mean, you're going to have that where you know that motivation on that. I mean, if they're working their tail off and they're making improvements.
Well, how do you measure that?
Not every supervisor is as objective as the next guy either.
That's right. There you go.
Who puts out the most social media? Who, you know, I mean,
yes.
You know, I mean, it may make you look good because you're presenting something, but in the classroom it's different.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Know.
You can't. It's.
I mean, no matter what. I mean, if you set somebody goals and they meet their goals, then they're doing it. You know, but you have some of them that you set goals and they're
just. It's
harder than
education
that.
Education both times at least.
It's harder
teaching
than that.
Achieving. That's what. If it's based on like stars, that's typically been.
Jason, when I first joined the board, it was so, I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me. It made me crazy. But you start to figure out, because, yeah, you're just going to have some that aren't going to rise to the same level as others. And hopefully those are the ones that decide to leave education, you know, unless, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the more important part.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, I get it. Because I remember thinking, why? You've got people like Lauren Lee Andrews who go so far above and beyond, but she gets the same as somebody who doesn't want to come to work, you know? And so it just, those are the ones. Anyway, Dr. Barnes, it's your floor.
Good evening, everybody. I just wanted to give you the updates. So in the bigger packet with the student enrollment, same information from last time, the updates for the junior high kids added in. And so, as you go through the beginning of Southside Athletics, I got those numbers from Coach Parks, and we added those in. Fine arts numbers as well for the junior high, and also Ms. Lear got the CTE numbers for junior high as well. There were some drop offs from junior high, but a lot of that was because sixth grade got moved. So, like in 1920, you had a certain number, and in 2021, you have a different number. But some of those programs that sixth grades were also in 1920, they're not in.
Like one is like in fine arts or so, but not athletics. Right?
No, it would be like the like theater and some of your CTE programs.
Yeah.
And I asked him about why it was a drop off, and that was a consistent answer across the board.
We're at 167 on robotics.
Because
they went to robotics.
Because they went to sixth grade.
Wow, I had no idea that the drill team cost had gone up as much as it has.
And I don't know if the cheer costs are reflected to the changes Ms. Whaley has made for next year.
For next year, yeah.
I think there's going to go down significantly.
Yeah, and she did.
Yeah.
She's made statements to that regard, but yeah, but if you look honestly at cheer and at dance. Although I'm going to brag on our drill team, they have looked amazing, amazing. And I know that we did give an additional stipend, and I was a little hesitant about that, but I think based on what I see, I'm pleased, very pleased. But yeah, $1,200, almost $1,300 for drill team. Is that sponsor also looking at a potential?
Well, I mean, I think, and if I just may ask the board, and I know we had this conversation at the conference a couple of years ago, is the intention just for us to, because you guys mentioned this about Mr. Bassett or not, to just limit the fees
overt and those that may be hidden, or just to limit them as much as possible, correct? I mean, we're not looking to eliminate all fees, because I don't think that's feasible.
Here's where I stand, and this is, I've been on the board, I don't know, too many years at this point, maybe. But we approve a budget. Mm-hmm. And then, if it wasn't enough money for a group, they start selling, they start making fees for their group. They didn't even come to the board and say, we need more funds. Matter of fact, there were funds left over in their previous balance, and they started charging kids. And we talk about, you know, what side of the clock are we on? But we lost all control.
Paying taxes twice.
Well, we don't, you know, we're supposed to set a budget, but you get to make your own budget.
I think some of it too, just looking at the fees, is like, what items are we talking about? So now budget items is really supposed to go toward construction, support a program. A lot of the fees I see what they're charging, like the extra stuff, the t-shirts, the, you know, things that you wouldn't normally have in your school budget to export.
And that's part of it. And I think the overall goal, and somebody else can speak up, but I don't ever want to feel like fees are restricting kids.
Yeah, nor do I. And
I don't think any of us do.
And I think it is.
Are there specific areas where you feel like they are?
I think if you look at your cheerleaders, if you look at anything that's high cost, I think, and the whole point in getting the data was let's find out. Let's see what the data says. And, you know, I haven't gone through it all, but
yeah,
that's my concern.
We keep the fees as minimal as possible, right? That are not normal budgetary expenses. We find savings when we can through the budget. Right, we make sure that we have payment plans or angel funds, whatever you want to call it, for those kids that can't afford it, and that there are no hidden costs. Like you mentioned, you know, you for athletics, you pay your $50 for your workout clothes that you keep, but then you have a baseball shirt, or you have a tennis shirt, or whatever. And are those things that are required for participation, or are those things that are just extra because other kids are using them? So that's kind of what I would like for us to really drill down on. I don't think we can eliminate all the fees.
Dr. Burton, I don't think you can either, but I think they're unnecessary. So, and I'm going to use cheer as an example. Now, Whaley is absolutely amenable to making changes, right?
Cheer is the largest common area or issue in every school district on this conversation, and our auditors bring that to the head of the conversation when they did activity audits.
Well, so I'm going to give you an example, though. And I'm using this because, again, I know Whaley is addressing it, okay? Mm-hmm. But I'll give you an example. There are three bows noted here, okay, hair bows. Mm-hmm. One is $18.95, one is $7.95, and then I went down, where's the other one? It was $20.95. Do you want to know how many times they wore those hair bows?
I would say nine.
Instead, the team captain would say, put a red ribbon in your hair. Go to Michael's and get a red ribbon. So $60 for bows, or 50 at least.
The issue that's is the kids had too much
opportunity,
so
yes.
Now she has addressed that.
Absolutely. So I'm just giving an example of that's where exactly I think there's opportunity to scale.
My point behind that is that we need to get it back to where it's $300 for the kids, and this is where we're going to be at. It's bad, and I've got phone calls whenever I first got on here about, hey, man, why is it $1,500 for my kid to go cheer? I didn't want my daughter to go cheer. That's the nightmare that you're dealing with when you get those phone calls from a community member.
Yeah.
You are then discouraging from any kid to trying out for doing anything. And I'm going to use another one, the barn fees for the ag barn deal. That one is, man, we went 30 years without having fees, and now you got to go get, you know, you're promoting kids to be in this, but then, I don't have something, you know, and I'm just saying this bluntly. You got kids that are struggling, parents that are struggling to even go buy the animal. But then you can't come up here and keep it. They can't afford to build their house, but then they still can't afford to keep it up here. You know, we don't charge kids playing tennis to go, you're going to play tennis? It's going to be $15 tennis fee, you know, to use the courts. Same thing when we're doing the FFA. That is just, again, you're promoting things to say, come join us, and we're going to hinder you from doing it. That is
I promoted the barn fees every school district in the country charges those fees because there's maintenance and operation on their buildings. I tried to get them in years ago, and Mr. Robert Hill shut it down for some reason or another. But, you know, for instance, it cost me $150 to $300 bucks a month for a light bill on my barn, depending on the season. And I'm all for doing as best we can, but if there's no skin in the game, they won't take care of it like there's skin in the game. Yep. And they've got, I'm not saying they got to be high. I don't even know what the current barn fee rent is.
75 for a small hunt, for a large?
For a season or a year?
Per animal. Per season. Right. So I think Conroe, if you do East County Conroe,
this is per year.
Bucks minimal.
It says
I don't think it is.
It says small animals per year, 75 cattle per year, 100.
You don't trust the data?
No, I don't think that it is. I think that it's.
Perfect. Look, that's what I'm trying to do. Let's be as upfront and honest as we can.
Look, make sure y'all are the board. If you say give it away, give it away. But I don't agree. I think everybody's got to have a little.
You know, there's other things too. And I'm just going to use me, and I brought that up, but for me as an example, that there's times where if there's, whenever that barn fee happened, there was families up there that were taking care of the barn. And that's whenever it, and you got some that aren't taking care of the facilities, and that to me may be another, you know, back then I was.
This is pre the new leadership. This was like 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Yeah,
pre.
Yeah.
Three years ago?
Pre that.
Yeah. Pre, leadership, not right. Three. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were some things that, you know, hey, these grates need to be cleaned. Well, parents were cleaning the grates. You know, whenever, if you didn't charge the fees, then you had parents doing that. So you were keeping costs down when the parents were doing that. I mean, we had parents paint all the pig beds. They got red paint everywhere. But when you have parents that have that mentality to do that, but then all that stuff stops, well, I'm paying fees. I'm not gonna keep the barn anymore. Well, then there's your driving cost. Now that was on a rat chase deal on that one. I just know that you don't charge tennis players, you don't charge athletics for $15 for being on the field. You don't charge FFA people for, you know. I mean, that's the equal part to that. And I do think whenever you're saying cheerleading. You know, it needs to be one. It needs to be $300, and then say, don't let it morph into $1,500 that kids can't.
I don't think it can ever be $300 again, because what you're going to have is, I mean, cheer's just a different world. But you're going to have parents then, like, wow, what? But I think there can be. Dr. Park, I think at the end of the day, the summary is your goal. And I love it. I always call it a giddy goal, right? Because you get giddy. Your goal is 100% inclusion.
Yeah.
So when you think about that, and you think, what could keep that? And Kevin, I've been sitting here thinking, do I agree with that? I kind of do see what you're saying. But then I think, we don't charge the drama kids to use the black box, and they pay electricity, right? So, I mean, I see what you're saying, but then I was like, but gosh, that kind of does seem like a double-edged sword. So just go back to I love that you have this giddy goal. It's an amazing, wonderful goal. So what keeps you from getting your giddy goal?
Yeah. Well, here's one thing on the barn fee. Here's where I question, y'all can help me out here because y'all are more than the ag. Back when it was 4-H and ag was typically kids once they got, it was actual school projects. Junior high and high school kids with school projects. Well now, what, a third grader can have a project? I mean, we're not. If a kid wants to play Little League football or basketball, they're paying.
That's true.
They're not. So how far down do we go? Yeah. When is it a school project? When is it truly a school function? And I'm not saying we don't still support it where we can, but I think that makes a difference.
When they developed the junior FFA, because ag used to be high school. You were 4-H prior to that.
I think it's a fantastic program having the junior.
But
it's a very valid point. I mean, and I, like I said, I kind of agree. I see Kevin's point too. I'm like, I see it, but at what point do you keep kids from being included?
Are we passing that cost on?
Yeah, that's why I said a drama. We're not charging them to use the black box, you know. I mean,
I'll just use my personal deal. I kept up for 3 years. I had a big tractor truck that just through my business came up here and would clean that grating out. It was $1,500 every time that I ever asked that if I've ever done it. We never once got a thank you letter for anything. Then you turn around and say, oh, you're going to keep doing that? And we're going to charge you $150 now to keep all your animals up here. Well, But when you do that, you don't keep that $1,500 bill to yourself. You know? I mean, that's where you realize that things quit motivating when you start, whenever you're trying to do the right thing, and then you, now we're going to charge you because you were doing the right thing. We're going to charge you anyways. Well, hey, you had parents that were not, won't charge anything to do what, you know, now is what's costing the school district.
I think we've seen that with the athletic fee this year, at the beginning of the year. Hang on, you're charging me a fee, and now my kid got kicked out the third day of athletic? Right, I mean,
but first they're going to do the fundraiser. Fundraiser, then you get kicked out.
So can we talk about that just for a second since we're in? Is that policy gone away? Seventh and eighth graders getting cut? Like completely? Or is it?
I don't know if it's gone away completely. I can look into that. I can tell you that for sure. But I think what happened this year was they applied a different standard, the same standard to a very different context, and that was a mistake.
And I appreciate that being a mistake. Because that's like, I mean, you're trying to promote. Anyways.
Yeah.
So I totally get, and I'm cool with cutting kids who just are not trying. But, you know, we talked about this.
I think he's talking to Coach. He said the goal in the spring is really to try to find me something else to participate in.
If you go to like their track meets, there's all kinds of events that kids don't even participate in. So we're cutting kids. Nobody signs up to run this race or that race. I'm like, anyway. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I think about the development part of it. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. But going to the fees, you know, I think there are a lot of fees in here. And I know we pick on athletics a lot, but it is one of our biggest programs. So, you know, like the workout. I mean, it seems as if that's something that you could do on a replaceable schedule, right?
The workout
like
clothes.
The way it used to. Like the athletic, the workout clothes, right?
I mean, if we buy them, we take them up.
I think that if we did that, I don't think we'd be wearing underwear, right? Probably not, unless they're just absolutely cheap. So, I think just keeping that in mind, the cost. If I wouldn't want to spend that on my kids, I just wouldn't want to charge the fee charge to mine.
Let me ask you this. I see some of these things like on band, it says all band items and. I don't see anything on like maybe athletics. Let's just take for instance, you got a guy here in front of me and he's wearing a full football gear, helmet, shoulder pads. What does that cost?
The budgetary impact of
$265 is a
set. Head to toe.
No, that's just
step on the field. Head
that's
to toe.
That's just the jersey.
Shoulder pads, mouthpiece, chin strap,
pants. It's about $200.
The jersey is $165. The pants are $100. The cleats are $78.
But that's just, you're talking about for the uniforms itself. But you're not, like the sleeves and things like that are not included. And I think kids sometimes may feel pressure to get those additional things too.
We pay for the boys' cleats? We pay for the boys' cleats?
Varsity.
Yeah, varsity pay for everything, for every sport.
Everything.
For every sport? No, not for every sport.
Varsity's free, whatever.
No, but I can tell you, you're not paying for softball girls' shoes at varsity. But I mean, I don't care. That's okay. I don't think you should. But please don't think
we're
you should.
For equity
but,
and consistency.
But I can tell you for certain that you're not paying for that. And in fact, in track, we had a big fundraiser because Coach wanted to get the kids the spikes, you know. So, and that was a fundraiser though to raise that money. Yeah. I don't think you should, but still.
I think it's been excused. This is football state. We're in Texas, but yeah. I think that we need to be more equitable.
Yeah, and I wanted to always ask a question too. I mean, what does it cost for us to carry the Under Armour bag? My kids wouldn't wear Under Armour, and then all of a sudden you go to school.
We were told when we adopted that, we were told that it would not have an impact. And since then, we started charging fees. Now, I'm not saying there's a direct correlation. I'm just telling you what we're told and what.
Yeah.
Do you remember when that was, Dan?
How old are the fees?
How long was Mark been here? It was his
7 years.
7 years.
I don't know when the fees started. It was before.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember being told that there were fees. But
we
I don't have kids. Yeah, right.
We weren't. And $50. Is not it. That is that what you got on your sheet? Just $50?
Yeah, it was workout stuff.
So my understanding is if the school buys it for the kid, the school takes it back. Right. They can buy it if they want to, but the school.
That's not a problem. You know, doing that?
No, like I'm.
Yeah, because that's what he told me.
You buy your own. If you're issued some school uniforms and you tear them off, you own the school. That's not a problem. Right? I mean, but I think that 63%, right, were on economic eco disadvantage, right? About for the school.
Last spring, yeah.
So, I mean, that tells you we have a lot of kids who don't have a lot of money, and they have. You know, is anything that we can do to alleviate this and encourage participation? Some of it's fees. I'm not saying go 100% away with fees, but just minimize as much as possible. I mean, if and then leave that option, right? If they want to buy it, because some people may not want to buy used clothes, but I think that should be our first option. And then if you want to buy them, it's your second. Not come to it and say, hey, I need to come and tell you I don't have enough money to play this, but I really want to. I don't.
That's right, because most people won't ask.
No, they won't. Most people are not.
They just will check out.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can see in, I mean, never mind. I think I've read it.
Peruse the data, and if there are other questions that you guys, it's...
Is there a goal for enrollment, right? I mean, for participation.
100%.
Come in with a 10%.
I want 100% of our kids involved in something. No,
but Brian came in with a goal of 10% of student population of high
school. He did.
Is there a goal in other programs for that?
I don't know that, but there will be because we like the template he used, and we're going to apply that to every program.
I appreciate that.
Well, you look at ROTC, if they don't keep that percentage up, they lose it. Every year, I think we've been under that number. I think most places are actually, but that's they kind of keep their funding and keep going. They need to keep that percentage. I'm going to say it's 10%.
10% is it's high school population.
It's just
for ROTC.
And we've been under it.
Yeah. That's what I was telling him.
Yes.
And then once they realize 100 or 10%.
I mean, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
I like that participation of attendance, like I said. You know, as I pointed out, some aren't following the growth trend.
Yeah.
What? So Chris has a presentation.
I'm using that band, and kudos to Adam too, because he's already said it. I mean, these intro kits for cosmetology, as they pick those things up, you got to have those to be involved.
Yeah.
It ain't like you can. I know the student cuts their hair or do what they do, but that student needs it to be involved. That's one of those things that...
Doesn't this, and this is a serious question, doesn't CTE get extra funding for that kind of stuff?
They have way of funding, but the thing that we have to be careful when we go doing stuff like this, especially in that situation, is if they take that packet, that deal with them, then that's a gift of public funds if somebody really wanted to push that issue.
But on the varsity side, are we giving away? I mean, when we issue them whatever they get,
their cleats, you mean?
They get sent down to JV.
Or they have the option to buy their jerseys, don't they? From their varsity? I don't think so.
I think it all gets sent down.
I think it does, but I can tell them.
Marcus has a replenish cycle on uniforms for each sport.
Right.
And, like, for instance, football, it's a 3-year cycle. But they have 3 uniforms, and they skip the 3rd year of the cycle. But most everything else is like a 2-year, because they don't see near the wear and tear as football are.
And they're buying their workout, or is that provided?
That's not a question I can answer right now.
For varsity?
A workout set?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a $50.
I think everybody pays for that, right, Katie?
Yes.
Yeah. I just want
to. Yeah.
And then we can't pay that much of playing, we can pay so much of money.
Yeah,
he says that they can't pay that off, they just get the uniform, get that on that workout gear back when the season's over. He says an only a small amount.
We'll keep chipping away. Oh, and here, I think that we should have our board policy should be we approve all student fees. Because we don't know. Otherwise, we have no clue. The only reason we know this is because we've asked and we approve student lunches. I don't know why we're not approving the fee. I mean, Same thing with the budget thing. Because then we have the discretion to say, let's not go up. Let's add to your budget.
Well, the one's definitely hearing about it out in the public.
So, is there a goal that y'all have set for having some of this figured out?
Well, I mean, if the board wants to adopt the student fee schedule, I would think by the spring when we are working on budget would be a goal.
If we don't want to adopt the student fee schedule.
What's that? I think we're...
We're pretty much set for this year, then, right?
Yes.
Because we're already in, we're being paid.
I don't... Do you see any issues with that? I mean, is that...
It's just a policy that needs to come from the board. Yeah. Come any time.
I don't have a problem with that at all. I think we just need to understand that there will be some fees. So we just have to figure out what we want to accept and what we don't.
It's going to make the school district broke.
I'll tell you about the cheer budget. The biggest piece with cheer and dance is not just the uniforms. I remember as a middle school principal, I was the same way. I wanted these calls down. Parents don't like anything that's not varsity. When you tell them you want to get that second uniform that doesn't have that name brand on, that was a big issue parents fought with me on. Two, they don't have the coaching, right? So cheer likes to go to camps. That's a big fee to go to that varsity camp, you know. It gets a little cheaper if they bring somebody in, but they still got to pay them. You know, so one of the things I look at with cheer and dance, like football, you have all these coaches to help coach all those positions, where in cheer and dance, you got one person, and they don't necessarily can help coach all those positions. And, you know, my daughter's been in dance forever, and we did cheer, so I understand those costs, and it can be expensive. That's some of the costs that you see with that.
I'm biting a ugly comment, so I'm just holding it. not you, Dr. Brown, sorry.
Well, and I thought that's like with the van thing, he said, like, to cover a lot of these fees, that's what the fundraiser is for. Mm-hmm. And I don't...
For the clinics and those kind of things like that?
Yeah. And somebody's, quite frankly, with athletics, you're going to do a fundraiser and you're going to pay for you. And if you don't do the fundraiser, you don't get to go on the trip. I mean, it's things like that are like, whoa.
I think the hairy part of it is the difference between each extracurricular. Mm-hmm. For instance, you've got three ag guys sitting on the other side and one that's recovering. Well, somebody bought all them pigs for my kids. That's just an extracurricular. And that's the one I chose my kids to be in, and my kids chose to be in. How many bats have you bought in your softball years?
Plenty of bats.
$300 a pop.
$300 a pop. I mean, how many pigs have I taken home?
I'm in on the conversation, but we got to decide just where do we land on it, because it's a big gray area. It's not black and white.
It is, but I see a chance that we can be some trailblazers here, and maybe because, like you said earlier, there's a lot of school districts all around us that has these big fees. And maybe we're onto something here. This might help out our little community here. And that goes back to what's hanging on the board up there. We want to try to make a difference here. We can start with something small like this. It could be a small fee. Chip away a little bit.
There you go.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Especially if we look at everything with the goal of trying to get the most
participation.
If that's your main goal for everything, then everything else kind of goes in line. Mm-hmm. Lower
that's,
fees
that was mine.
To make it more bus routes so that they can go home after practice. That's something else to make it that much easier for kids to participate, if that's our goal. Just like they said at the Schlecky Center, what you want, you can get done.
Yeah.
If you want 100% kids graduating, you might have to spend a whole lot of money on 3% of them.
Yeah.
But you can, if that's your goal, you can make it happen, and that's where you put your money.
And I like looking at other districts, but that's where I think we got to be careful about saying, well, look over here, look over here. That may not be there. That might not be on their wall.
That's right.
That might not be their goal that kids participate. You know? They might want to go home at 3 o'clock and get the heck out of
it. Yeah.
That's the teacher's goal.
According to John Tanner, it's not anybody else's goal but ours, because he keeps talking about it. So,
Dr. Barnes, the cosmetology kits, back to what Kevin said a little bit ago, is that something that they keep? It's $623. So
no,
that's theirs.
No, I don't pick that fee up.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry?
I don't think
they're
doing this year.
The $623.
Yeah, but are they keeping the kids?
No,
it's not unless they want to buy.
The welding kids. I've got pictures. They got every welding kit.
a hood and a little toolbox to keep all their stuff in for the year.
Can we give them a long sleeve fire rated shirt so they can take pictures and put it on Facebook?
Can you give them or can't you give
them? Can we give them long sleeve shirts?
I'm sure you can.
Can you give them a long glove?
You can probably find those at Costco.
But yeah. I think,
It's our nose in.
But
okay, thank you.
Going back to what they were saying, one of those deals that I went through this in Fort Worth or online Fort Worth, and it said, it's okay to challenge the status quo. So when we look at some of the other districts, it's okay not to be like that.
Yeah.
I mean, and that goes both ways, but it is okay.
Done a good job.
We must look at our budget because that's important too.
Okay. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Okay, we'll keep chipping away. Consistency, equity, and transparency. Right?
All right,
one more thing. You got to go?
I
got to
run.
Okay. Brian sent me the HR PowerPoint, so y'all can look at it. We're going to go over it, but I will send that off to you.
I'll just say this. How many someone from soccer is a hell of a lot cheaper than football?
Football. Well, if somebody's going to have a future cheerleader, I'd like to minimize those fees as much as possible.
Well, some of it's just, it is just the students have been given carte blanche, and so I think once that gets addressed, it will
get better.
But honestly, I mean, shouldn't.
Because before we leave here, I mean, I had
no clue. No, I'm going
to
stop.
Coming to the board, is that, I don't know if we're going to be split on that or not.
What?
I mean, that.
Fees comes to the board.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the fence. I like it both ways, because, there's some of that where I don't think, it's been a goal, as we sit in this room, it's been for, we talked about it a lot over the past year. So, I think it's something.
Yeah, it's a hard goal to get to.
It's a hard goal to get to. That's what but I don't know. It's one of those deals that he asked it, and I'm like, yeah, that's a hell of an idea. But on the same hand, it's, how does it feel for you administrators to have to bring that to a loop, that's kind
of. Well, it's tedious, but I think it's one of those things that just there's a lot of layers to it, and I think
initially it is.
Yeah,
but once you get into a consistent policy,
I think two things about that. It's transparency, and as we grow, we need to have those processes and those layers of things. Because if it gets out of control, like when we're a smaller district, you could kind of know the families. You could say, this family can afford this, this family, you knew it. But now that's out of, we're growing. So I think it's important that we have, you're saying, is to have all that settled.
And I think if we have
a
clear template and a clear goal, and we'll bring you a recommendation, and the board can either accept the recommendation or not, and tell us to go back and do some more work.
I foresee it mostly being a reporting and knowledge piece.
For the transparency part, right?
And initially we may look at it and say, this is still not what we want because we're having this conversation.
But we need to have all this settled before budget cycle, right?
Well, it'll be a part of the budget cycle.
Well, and part of budget cycle is every department head is supposed to turn in what their requests are. So, while you're turning that in, tell us what your fees are, too.
Yeah.
Right? They go hand in hand.
Yep.
So.
But part of that I would ask also, and I'm sorry to keep picking on chair, but what is the opportunity as well? So, going back to, JV, there's a lot of times, and because we know a game will get changed and varsity needs to play because it's going to rain on Friday or whatever. So, so you can have these students paying $1,400 for JV for three games. And so you also have to look at the opportunity and weigh that in as well to some of that.
Well, I think now that we've all.
And I'm sure we've killed that.
No,
but
I just think those are conversations that I have to have, that he has to have with the principals. And So now that it just took a while to get to the.
Another question of that, especially on cheerleading drill, what have you, or any of these others, are they just showcasing at games, or are they also building a competition squad?
That's true.
Y'all see what our band's done since they really started focusing years ago on that.
And look at the drill team. I have no doubt the drill team's going to, they look fantastic.
Has our cheer, at one point, cheer was doing some competing? Yes, no, maybe.
That's
an extra budget amount, because every one of those events, that's $1,000 per event.
But
not including trial.
But if we're going to do it, let's kick some butt doing it.
That's what I'm talking about.
Let's do it.
All right. We ready to move on to HR?
Sure.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Best for last, right?
What's that?
Best for last. So, oh, one thing, too, before you start, Katie had texted me, and we are going through, we're working right now, just so y'all know, in November, to send the agenda for November's regular board meeting to y'all well in advance, so that then I would respectfully ask, like I emailed today, that we do the November agenda review via Zoom, because they're setting up in here for elections, and I think it just would be easier on everybody if we did it via Zoom. Are y'all okay with that?
The election's going to be here at the ECA?
Here at ISS. Yes.
No, I'm good with Zoom. Okay. Yes.
Just, there's, yeah. We're meeting a lot. So I just
it's hard to do regular meetings by Zoom, but the reviews, absolutely.
Yeah. But here's the agenda that was. So okay.
That's what we're going to use for the reviews.
It's the beginning of the agenda. So, okay. I mean, if there are things on there that y'all want more information about, like I think. Anyway, go ahead and we'll talk about that then.
Very well. All right, so I have one of the smallest departments here at Central. It's myself and Leanne, who is my secretary. I have Laura Daniels, who's our compensation specialist. Also, I left this off, Mr. Lynch's secretary, so she pulls dual roles. And the person that I am extremely grateful to have, Jessica Hernandez, benefits and leave. Because this happened pre-COVID, and she has been a blessing, because I can't imagine myself trying to track all this on my own at this point. So, we do a lot of things, and the first bullet is the new one, which is COVID-19 response, tracking, and reporting. So, we work with personnel as far as close contacts. They're having to quarantine. We work with what kind of leave they're on, if they're on emergency paid sick leave or working remotely option. We have to report to Montgomery County Health Department. We have to report to the state agencies. So it has taken a lot this year.
You're also running the Employee Wellness Committee, which I handed off to you early on. So.
Yes.
Doing a good job of that.
Thank you very much.
So when we have a COVID case, we have to report that to Montgomery County Health Department?
Yes, on the student and staff side.
Yes.
And the other thing is we're creating a COVID-19 dashboard.
Yeah. So yeah, Insperity just did that too. Yeah.
And you can go to a state website and see all of the districts in the state to see who has the cases.
Mm-hmm. 1,000-something, right? 1,019.
Yeah.
I don't know
when. Mm-hmm. We've had 34 cases total.
No, like right.
Yeah. I
currently active, 7 active staff. And I'm happy to say everyone has recovered and come back to work. So,
how many tries to the workplace?
24. Mm-hmm. Potentially 1, and that's very tenuous at best. Everyone else has been getting it from spouses. Spouses bring it home, and I get it. They're
an important point.
No confirmed cases that we can trace back to the East Montgomery County Fair and the auction.
Right.
Sewer spray failed.
Yeah. So, go ahead, Brian. I'm sorry.
If it didn't come from that, then it's not going to happen.
We probably all had it anyway.
Yeah, so. Right.
Staffing, recruiting, which has gone all virtual so far this year. Grievances, substitutes, contracts. Professional development compliance, certification checks, onboarding, the online application portal, and then, of course, before COVID, just the standard FMLA and other leave.
Are you going to cover substitutes?
It's part of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Jack, you'd asked about nepotism and being on the school board. So, once you are elected, you are under the laws of nepotism. Now, Dan, your sister worked well in advance of you ever being on the board, so... Just if anything ever happened with Dan, he would have to recuse himself, or as to say, Joanna, he would have to recuse himself. But what this means is, you guys, if anyone from this point forward, when you're on the board, wants to be hired, there's degrees, the laws of sanguinity, okay? So the person related by blood within the third degree or the second degree of marriage. So what does that mean? So come on, that's a good internal joke right there. Come on.
Sanguinity.
So,
So first degree of blood, of course, is your child. Your second degree would be your brother or your sister. Your third degree, uncles, aunts, nieces, nephews. And marriage degrees is spouse, and then second degrees of marriage, brother-in-law, sister-in-law. So
that it goes to my point, but and maybe it doesn't, honestly, it doesn't matter, but I was curious. So it does sister-in-law, to me there's a difference then in it's my brother's wife or it's my husband's brother's wife. You see what I'm saying? Like, to me that's a third degree, is it not? My brother's wife is just one removed. My husband's brother's wife is two removed. Is that not a different degree or no?
Your husband's
brother's wife.
So that makes her your...
She'd be my sister-in-law, but she's so, 2 degrees removed
no,
versus
second,
my husband, my
no,
brother's
second
wife.
Degree. She's your okay. sister-in-law. Yeah.
That's second. Not right, but okay. Because really, I think, because I'm like, well, just go divorce
it's
him.
It's your brother-in-law's wife.
It's my brother-in-law's wife.
But she's still your sister-in-law.
You know, yes. But do you see what I'm saying? But it, to me, that's a different level. That, and again, I don't care. But, you know, my brother's wife, that's a second, whereas my da-da-da-da-da.
So,
you
officially
really
on that.
Huh?
We'll talk to the lawyer.
No, honestly, I don't care. I was curious. I don't care.
That's the state.
Yes, I pulled that straight from state law. So investigations and documentation, the key here is if you don't write it, it never happened. If you never write it down, it never happened. I can have a conversation with Suzanne and yell at her all I want, and then whenever she does something, and I go, that's it, you're fired, because I yelled at you in February of last year. I never made her write anything down. She never had to sign anything. She's like, what are you talking about? So if you don't write it, it never happened. There are many such investigations, the keys being there is an incident or report of an incident. So a director or principal notifies Dr. Barnes and Human Resources, and together an investigation is launched. 9 out of 10 times an employee will be placed on paid administrative leave while the investigation occurs. Just because mainly, if we come back and find that there was nothing to it, then I'd have to back pay that employee anyway. So that's why we look at paid administrative leave. We interview the parties, witnesses, victims, perpetrators. The most important thing is getting due process. You must get a written statement from the employee. I mean, you can't go through all of this and not talk to the person who's on the hot seat. How bad is it? So there is the new laws, the pass the trash laws and all that that came out of the legislatures, that's what they call it. So some of these are absolutely mandatory reports to TEA. The last meeting we had, and we're in a workshop now, so I'm not going to say any names or specifics, but last conversation we had in closed session, that's a mandatory report to TEA, okay? You always want to consult with your school attorney, because if we fail to report it, or a principal fails to report it, he's the one who goes to jail. So, as he always tells me, keep me out of the slammer. So, you know, we report. Besides a report's aspect, did the employee break the law? So, that's where we contact Chief Weatherly. And I, you know, Chief Weatherly is my law enforcement.
What is SBC?
State Board of Educator Certification. Yes. So they're the ones who'll put if on a teacher's license, if it was suspended for a while, or if it's under investigation, or if it's revoked, it comes from SBEC.
I was looking up a definition and thinking through it. Sorry.
So after you go through, you do your interviews, you get your statements, you review any evidence, video, surveillance, audio. You got two routes. One, you find out everything's fine, employee can return to work. Maybe you need to do a memo to the file. Maybe there's a little bit of gray area. Or two, it's bad and you want to do an official separation of employment. So, things to know about contract law. So, a lot of times we will, depending on when in the year it is,
we might keep someone on paid administrative leave for the remainder of the year. The reason why is, let's say we find out, and every case is different, right? If someone is having an inappropriate relationship with a kid, we're going to terminate, okay? We're going to terminate every time. There are other cases that are a little bit different. So the reason why is if you try to terminate mid-year, that employee is entitled to an independent hearing examiner from Austin. So the state will send someone down, they will hear the case, and they will decide whether or not they get to remain employed or not. If you wait till the end of the year, they don't have that right. They don't have a right to an independent
hearing. Let me ask you a question. How do those independent hearings, how does that normally go for you guys? Because I can tell you, I'm working with other state officials, it never really goes our way.
I can tell you that I have never experienced one, thankfully.
I was going to say, we have no experience.
And that's why you leave them until the end of the year, yeah, so that you don't have to give them the independent.
How do you go for you an album?
I mean, the things that never go well are like the
workman's comp.
Workman's comp always goes again. Never, ever.
But again, you're dealing with state.
It's their job to win those.
Even the ones I have to deal with.
Yeah.
So
it never goes well for us.
I can tell you.
Same mode.
Yeah.
That don't work.
Yeah, Barry, I can tell you the horror stories I've heard from colleagues in other districts who've gone through it, and like one having, you know, what I would say is a very bad, toxic employee who, you know, was out on claims of assault. Like they thought they had an ironclad case terminating. Hearing examiner came in and overturned it. So
going to that, at what point is it worth it for the district?
I think that, like I said, each case is different, but I think anytime you have a kid who is being hurt by an employee, whether it's physically, sexually, emotionally, I think we roll the dice every single time. You know, I mean, the kids are going to always come first. Adult problems are messy, as we all know, but I can safely say none of us here are going to tolerate an employee hurting a child.
Okay. Is that what differentiated the teacher who left the kids in the bathroom? I mean, left the kids in the classroom to go to the bathroom versus the other lady who booked a domestic issue? I know we don't like talking about that. One was very fast, and we got her a resignation. Well, we got a resignation. Never mind. So we got a resignation on her, but is that something that would you would draw
upon? Well, here's what I'll say. I think there's a big difference between the two. One, hypothetically speaking, if these were real cases, because we're in a board workshop, if someone locked kids in a classroom and left, I'd have a bigger issue than the other one.
And lied about it. Hypothetically. And lied about it.
But I'm saying that's something that we're
yes. Let's yes. Go. Absolutely, every time. Kids are always first.
The criminal aspect of it also.
What's that, sir?
You can probably weigh out the criminal aspect of it also, mm-hmm. whether it be a misdemeanor trial.
And I would say that 99% of the time we try to seek a resignation, but that doesn't mean if we seek a resignation that we're not going to follow up with the other penalties.
Well, like that one, in that situation.
Right.
It goes
like
on.
Termination just opens you up to so many more. So, like I'm saying, like sometimes people say, why did you let him resign? Well, that doesn't mean we're not going to continue to follow through with the investigation.
Okay. I think right. resign is the prospect of teaching somewhere else, right?
Potentially, but that's what I'm saying. We're not going to stop the reporting to SBEC.
Well, that's just it, right? If they want to go teach someplace else, we're still going to do our due diligence. We'll do the SBEC report, everything else. We don't stop just because they leave. Like in the past... And you know, the reason they passed the law is so I got my hand caught in the cookie jar of whatever situation in the school district. Fine, I resign. I go on down the road. I start there. In years' time, or you know, it's just kind of like the bad penny keeps turning up.
Yeah.
So that's because if you quit, then my responsibility of an investigation ended at that point. Oh, well, they're no longer employed. They're out of
the
district.
That's
not the case anymore. The laws have changed.
Good.
Yeah.
Long time coming.
I'm just glad you guys are not civil service.
When was it changed?
It's been maybe 10 years?
I want to think, maybe it was around 2002. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine.
It was 2002. Yeah, you're right.
Because I remember there was an article in the Chronicle, and they had a bunch of teachers on, and the teachers would move, have sex with kids, and move to a different district. And then the principals would kind of tell a story just to get rid of them, because they were on a contract, and they would tell a lie to the hiring, say, oh yeah, they were a great employee, just so that they would get them out of their contract, because they wanted, and so stuff like that was kind of brought to light, I think.
Right. No, it happened. I mean, it's true.
Kroger, what do you mean by mid-year, though? Sorry, going back to that. So, I mean, obviously, I know what I think, but if we hear of something in April, we're going to keep them until the end of the year because...
Well, you're not going to...
Not if they're injury to a child, okay, but...
Right. Well, even then, we're not going to get to hear a hearing examiner until the end of the school year anyway, if that was the case. I mean... But, you know, they're certainly not coming back. I mean, every case and the timing of it is unique. By mid-year, I mean, like, it's December and we're moving forward on termination.
Gotcha. You know? Okay, I gotcha.
So the two big objectives on documentation is number one, you want to improve employee performance, or you need to remove the unsatisfactory employee. The reason it's important, we believe in what we see. It improves understanding and documents history, provides clarity both to you as the employer and the employee. If you have cumulative documentation, patterns begin to emerge year after year. It helps assist your memory. Like, guys, I have to go back and look at my documentation. I mean, I've slept since the last what have you we dealt with. And it improves our decision making. Also, you know, when people move on, if Diana moved on tomorrow, we want her documentation to remain to help whoever was behind her. If she was, you know, we had a bad employee that she was working on. Improves communication to employee of the problems. It's absolutely essential for hearings, and it provides us a fair treatment with the employees because the documentation has to be signed and reviewed. And, of course, there is always the ability to, you know, to grieve it if you need to. But it gets you to where you want to.
May I jump in here? So 90% of the time, a simple letter will fix most of your problems. Just a simple documentation. And then the other piece on that is how often have we've had David Hodgins in now twice.
Twice
to work with all of our principals and assistant principals, so they receive training on documentation, and they're all day trainings where they go through different scenarios and things like that. So just reassure you, we do have our legal counsel come in and provide that.
Yes.
But I'll say this too on documentation, one of the issues we've always had in every district I've been in, and I mean, it's just getting those principals to document early.
Yes.
Right, and not wait, because then they'll want to come up to say, I want to get rid of, that's probably your biggest pet peeve, I want to get rid of this teacher. You know,
and it's February, and you're telling me about it.
Yeah, there's no documentation.
Right.
So, anyway, sorry.
No, perfect. Kevin kind of touched on staffing. You know, obviously it's essential, keeps the budget aligned, allows us to teach the maximum extent. I shared this with Dr. Burke, and he'll share with you. There's the hyperlink to our last staffing survey. I was sent in 2019 before, you know, COVID and everything else, when we were about to open up Timber Lakes. So one of the things that we were way off on is pre-K. Because we didn't, you know, we were going off old numbers and everything else. And, you know, the state has seen a 50% reduction in pre-K numbers because moms aren't sending their kids up that early.
The state.
You know, where she's at, that they have 2021. They're at 1 to 3.
Oh, wow.
One day, today they have no kids.
Well, they've kept those babies home all their life for once another year.
Yeah.
Situation. Or some sort of class that you don't have to.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't have to be there.
Mom stays home another year, our baby's safe.
Well, you got a lot more parents that normally wouldn't be home that are home.
That's true. Also. Yep.
That's true.
Hey, don't use me as an example. Work hard from home, okay?
When it gets up.
So some keynotes, grades K through four, you are mandated at a 22-to-1 ratio, teacher to student. Assistant principal, they say 500-to-1. And then counselor, they say 300-to-1. Now, obviously, we don't have the finances right now to have 2 to 3 counselors on elementary schools. But
there has been some chatter legislatively about that, about lowering that counselor ratio.
How do y'all handle the pre-K overstaffing?
So that has been actually a project with Tammy and Dr. Barnes and Brian for the first 2 months of school, is balancing out elementary because of the pre-K shortage. So we've had to move teachers. We've had to absorb some into remote classes. It's been a...
What are our numbers? Yeah. You said it's significantly off.
Of what we were, I think. We projected 140, 150.
I haven't gotten that. 70? Some of them are showing back up. But 80? There's a guy over in that other corner office that every time there's mention of hiring someone else, he gets to say, hey.
I've got a pre-K teacher.
Yeah. Mr. Coaster and his crew, Dr. Barnes and Tammy, have done a really good job of utilizing staff with extra capacity in their day.
No one has, we have been able to internally shift, fill the needs that we have. Yep. This has been a year like any other. Yeah. I mean, remote teachers, hybrid models, kids coming back and forth. I mean, it's maddening.
Are you going to make over to our incentive, right?
From the state, yes, we are.
Just one so far. Okay. Can we go over what text you about?
What is your testimony?
With our staffing working so hard,
we didn't know
about some sort of small stipend for our teachers.
Kevin and I talked about that, but it's...
Come on, we took a $1.4 million reduction in FSP payment.
I ain't talking about across the board.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, let's talk about it later.
Substitutes.
You got your checkbook?
There's a nationwide shortage. Last school year, I averaged around a good day, 95% fill rate. Bad day, 89%. This year, a good day fill rate, I'm at 70%. I am mainly in the mid-60s or lower on fill rate of subs.
Mr. Kroger, I'm sorry to stop you, but do you believe that that's because we're not paying enough, if it's not worth it all of a sudden, right? Because, hey, $60 isn't worth...
To what?
I think $30 extra a day.
Sorry, go ahead, Alan.
I think they went up 30 a day.
Yeah. Maybe 100
for certified.
For certified size.
Right. I think they went from whatever they were.
Yeah. Up 30. You know, I certainly think that raising the rate might help, but I don't think $100 a day, someone in a high risk category is going to encourage them to come to what is in their minds a breeding ground of COVID.
Just got too many.
I don't know. What is our
being
like $15 an hour?
70 for undergrad.
You want certified people?
We may have to look at that.
Certified subs.
What are we paying them if they're not certified?
And are
60?
I thought it was 70.
I thought it was
70.
I know it's not 100.
That's barely minimum wage.
Is it 60 or 70 for non-certified?
70 for non-certified, 80 for degreed, 100 for
certified. But when you look at even the certified, that's what, $15 an hour?
Yeah.
That's not very much money to get somebody to come and, you know, put up with kids, which...
We discussed paying their fingerprinting.
Alan, did you say that new... I'm sorry, because I was...
Willis that raised their sub fee. Across the board.
I heard that New Caney had as well. Not that I know we're comparing, but I'm just curious. Again, going back to the COVID climate but are we, I guess it kind of goes back also, though, to need. So we have a substitute shortage, but if we have a kids shortage, then is it comparable? I don't know.
The thing that gets us now is people who go into quarantine. Their husband or their wife comes home and is COVID positive, so they got to be out for 14 days.
It was there.
So now, you know, even though they're fine and they can pipe in and do remote teaching, I still need a body in there. And so now, I've got cases in high school, junior high, and Piney Woods. So you know, that's 2 weeks, let's say those are 2 week stints out there, right? So I just, and like I said, that that Washington Times story is all about the national shortage of all the school districts are seeing. So
so are you saying there's an increased demand in general, just per se?
Throughout the nation, oh, there is, absolutely.
Yeah. Increased demand, right, because you got, because of the quarantine demand situation where...
Demand drives rates.
Same thing with bus drivers.
Yeah, sure.
And you still have a lot of retired people. The retired people are the ones who were more of our COVID. Mm-hmm.
So are nepotism law?
That's a double.
That's part time.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
I got one at home.
Maybe publish the dashboard and show them you don't have it.
That's a part-time job. They're not.
That is a first degree, but part-time, it's okay.
Yeah.
But no, that's not true, because Dory can't sub here.
What's that?
Dory can't sub here.
Who's that?
She can't sub here.
But your sister-in-law has.
Yeah, she has. She subbed here.
And Dory, well, yeah, yes. But do you see what I'm saying? But Dory can't sub here, so why? I mean, I don't know why she can't.
That's for full-time job. Substitute is not a full-time job.
Somewhere along the way, somebody did interpret it. That's been interpreted two different ways. Mm.
Okay.
So, she would much rather work here.
Okay,
she would. I'm texting her right now.
We would much rather have her here, because she's bad to the bone.
So, no. That's on that nepotism. Is that for the? That's
when you text her. Tell her to text you.
What's that?
It's for the people we hire, right? But not office. We don't hire all positions ourselves, right?
It is for anyone of full time employment in the district.
Whether they're
I don't know if
they're.
Yeah.
I don't
know if
they're Jody,
though.
because any employment can reach board status should it go through the grievance process.
Yeah. Right.
So,
I was just thinking, like a parent versus a contract teacher.
Right. No. It'd be full time employment.
I don't know where Dory was told that.
Yeah.
I don't know where either, but she's told me several times, and the New Caney deal is killing her. So New Caney will only allow, so Bell can't work right now, because New Caney, they only have like a permanent sub position. So Dory, to sub over there, she was going to have to take a whole 3 month position. Well, she couldn't because of the church and because of the fair and all this other. So, yeah, so she's not been working because of that. I just text her.
That's not how I interpret the law.
I just text her. Right. I'm like, hey, Kroger says.
Yeah.
Now, Vicky, though.
Same.
Oh, that's right. Vicky was told she could, that you're absolutely right. She was told she could be on the PTO, but that she could not continue to be a sub. And the reasoning was, and I don't know who told her, but the reasoning was you are your boss's. Your boss's boss.
As a board member?
Right, as a board. She was a board member at the time.
Different.
Yes.
Nepotism
is the same thing.
But now Dory's different, right? When Vicky was on the board, she was told
she had to sit out for a year.
So you're saying a board member, your interpretation of a board member could sub?
I don't think she could at all sub. I think she could only be on the vote.
At some point, it even read
out. Oh, after she finished.
She had to wait a whole year.
Yeah, yeah.
Before she
somewhere along. Shifted, and they said, I don't know.
I don't know how that I don't know how that could be legal. Because you're an elected representative working for...
Right, and she was she was her boss's boss.
So you can control different aspects.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole point of the nepotism law.
Right.
Because now, no. You ain't going to tell my wife that.
Well, that's true. And here's the deal. Let's say that something did happen with his wife. He would have to recuse himself. There's no way he could hear anything.
Yeah, but not, well, right. I always thought because it's not a full-time position.
Yeah.
Like I said.
I'm the same way.
It's been both ways.
Consistency.
Yeah, because you're right. Kelly did.
Something different.
Kelly did sub here. I didn't even think about that.
Talk both sides of it.
Our current active sub rate last year was around, this time I think we had around 130 substitutes. We have 70 right now.
So
and just because they're active doesn't mean they're working every
right,
day.
Right.
Some of them can work one day a week. Some of them can maybe work two. So I'm not getting all the jobs filled. Yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say, what would it cost us to raise the under emergency, to raise the rate for sub, just to kind of experiment to see if that would bring in more people? I mean, is that something that is possible to do?
Hey, can I get out of the way before you shoot those darts? Because like,
typically, having a day,
we know the data.
The
we could actually experiment to see if that would be something feasible.
So when
really
I ran it today, I was at a 70% fill rate, and I think that was when I think I had 20. I think I had 20 unfilled, perhaps.
20 unfilled?
Yeah, 20
that's
unfilled.
Direct
how many
contact
are long-term?
With kids. I just,
I agree.
I hate that.
Not a budget.
I mean, because I think I've got three that are kind of long-term.
So you got about 45 a day.
Is there a different rate for long-term?
Yes.
50 a day. That's
on the 10th day, it goes up.
But as long term,
so
because you know it's going to get worse at Christmas. Maybe.
Although you do have to offer benefits.
Yeah, for certain. Because you know,
because
true.
Because of
that's true. That's a good point.
I want to. Can I?
That
that's pretty interesting.
I want to hear what you, I want to hear what Mr. Kroger was just saying. Sorry.
I'm sorry because he brought up that it might be covered by our ESSER grant. That may be an allowable expense. I think that's something we can look into. Anyway,
that is
go
good.
Ahead, I'll
okay, so y'all hang on 1 second. Will you please just, Jason was asking about long term. Will you say that again?
Oh, he was asking me at that point, they considered like part time. And I just, you do have to, after a certain point and a certain marker, you have to offer them benefits because of the Affordable Care Act, because of the hours they're working per month. But they still are considered even at that point, they're not a part time employee.
They are not?
They are not.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to for Dory for a second, using her as an example. So if Dory were to sub, she could sub a day here, a day there. But if she were to sub more than 10 days consecutive, she would be considered a long-term sub, and therefore she could not do that because she would be considered...
She is still not a full-time employee. Just because
so
you're a long-term sub, I can go in there the next day and say, I don't need you anymore. We can pull a sub.
There's not a contract. You're
there's
right.
There's no contract.
So she could
there's
do
no
that.
There's no contract and there's no
and I'm just using her as an example, sorry. But then there's, it's even possible, though, that she could qualify for benefits based on the affordable.
She could qualify for benefits, but that's because of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And I know she doesn't need benefits. I'm using her as an example.
All right. Teacher incentive allotment. Okay.
So teacher incentive allotment by the state.
By the state. House Bill 3, teacher incentive allotment. So due to COVID-19 and the cuts we had, we got rid of our local incentive pay because we have to move to the teacher incentive allotment by House Bill 3. Teacher TIA is an HB3 initiative. The goal is they want to get teachers to a six-figure salary, which is good. The problem is TIA itself is only going to cap that at 30% of teachers. So that's not everybody. So how a teacher can get to six figures under teacher incentive allotment, and I'm giving you the big, broad brushstrokes on this. They can either become nationally board certified, which is basically, in a sense, they're going to go get a master's degree. Not a master's, but they say it's as hard as getting a master's to become nationally board certified. Or we develop a local designation system that has to be approved by both Texas Tech University and the Texas Education Agency. And I guess Texas Tech had better vendors or better...
They just pull Texas Tech out of your end and say, okay, they're clarifying agency.
But the goal is you have us as an organization, you guys as elected representatives, teachers, community members, stakeholders, we all get together and we come up with a designation system on how we're going to designate really great teachers that you're talking about with the stipend.
Right.
It has to be fair, it has to be equitable, and of course it is absolutely grievable. So the clean route is to sit there and say, go get nationally board certified, because the Texas Tech and TEA have said, if you're nationally board certified, it's an automatic.
Unless you're not 30%, right?
No, they said that's an automatic. Because they know there's a cost associated with it, and not everyone is going to go do this. So another huge part of it is, of course, star scores. They want to see your star scores and the improvement you have on the star scores. So those things on that wall there, in a sense, we're backtracking on because the TIA is so heavily growth-minded on STAR and seeing the value-added measures there. So we were originally part of Cohort D, which meant that we were supposed to start work on this like this year. But with COVID and could we even have school and we're here now, we moved to Cohort E. So
which a lot of people do.
Which, yes, many, many, many districts did. So now we're part of the 21-22 school year. So, things to know about teacher incentive allotment. So let's say that we have a teacher who goes through the process, they are nationally board certified, or we develop a local system that gets the blessing from various agencies. So now we have a decision to make. You have to spend 90% of what they're going to give you on the campus where that teacher's at. So, if they're going to give us $20,000 because Jackie is a nationally board certified teacher, now we have a decision to make as a district. We can break that money up and distribute it to, let's say Jackie teaches at the junior high. We can give it to everyone at the junior high and everyone gets a couple extra $1,000. Or...
That's the Biden plan.
Or... I say, Jackie, you earned it. Here's your $20,000. So what this has done is it's going to create the new warfare, right? There's the, hey, I want my team to share in this, or the, I work my ass off. I want to get paid. I want to make the six figures. And I don't fault them. I mean, they earned it. You know, my recommendation, just in researching this at this point, is if you want to stay competitive, you pay the player. You know, it's going to be free agency on teachers.
And who's to stop other districts that may be in better financial positions from coming in and say, I'll give you $10,000 extra on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and on the before you even think about developing a local designation system, when TEA came up with their local accountability system, there were probably 40 to 50 districts that applied for that, and there's one left because they didn't approve anybody. If it didn't fit STAR and accountability, I mean, Humboldt spent 2 years developing it, and it was really good. Now it's just Dallas ISD.
But if they went to
what?
Tech, though, if they went to Tech and they're partnering with somebody or someone who can help develop it, it seems like you could get it from them.
This is going to crash and burn.
It is.
Like most, this program has been tried before.
Yeah.
It's going to crash and burn. Teachers are going to get caught cheating.
Yep.
Because $20,000 is worth a risk.
Yeah, it is.
Well, and $20,000 wouldn't even take them to six figures. So, yeah, but here, your example of $20,000
is too low.
Here's the problem with this.
Maybe, but, you know, I mean, like.
There's, what is it, 35 eligible, 32?
Mm-hmm.
If you max everything out?
Yeah.
Right. The problem with this is it has a lot of traction in the legislature.
Yes.
They don't understand.
Yes.
It sounds great on the face of it. We have more chance of the reading academies getting tanked than this. But you're right.
Oh,
this
will not saying it won't go forward.
It will not.
But it's going to go forward and crash.
But maybe that's the intention.
Because you get a lot of people like Jason, I mean, you know, saying, hey, why don't we just pay the ones who are performing? But it's the whole problem is to who, what, how do you designate that? You know, how do you define
if every
that?
Kid what came is with the
cost?
Same
you could get
instructional ability, then it would work. But they don't.
You can get a CTE teacher or an art teacher or, you know, another teacher that doesn't teach STAR that's just fantastic. And they're out there working their behind off, and they're not eligible for the money. Right, right.
So
what would be the percentages of the people taking the National Board Certification? Say you had 100 teachers here. What do you think would be your percentage? Because that's the highest.
What is the cost? Because I think that factors into that. I mean, if it's $2,000 to go and get that certification, right. Some of our teachers are going to be like, I can't pay $2,000 right now.
5%. How much?
I think
your answer is not 5%.
I think you're being high with 5%.
2 is probably more likely.
Isn't that just one component, though, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, all
you're
the
National Board
certified,
do not pass go, you go
get the $20,000?
You're out.
And there's formulas. They're tentative formulas. But there's formulas that they have out there for each school district, and I'm happy to go in there and update and see what they're saying you would get now. But like I said, the National Board Certification, they said, is the automatic you're approved, which tells me that if they're saying only 30% of teachers are going to be approved, that's going to be hard to become nationally board certified.
What does it say, Suzanne?
$2,000.
To do it?
It says, in addition to the $75 registration fee, the cost to earn your National Board Certification is $2,000.
I actually said $2,000, but...
PTS does offer fee waivers. Also, your school or district may pay a portion of the fee if you are successful in gaining certification.
I mean, $2,000 for a $20,000 payoff.
I want to summarize. I want to restate what you're saying, okay?
Okay.
One, we stopped doing our teacher incentive because with COVID-19, some of our elements were such as participation in extracurriculars, and therefore it wasn't feasible. So that's why we stopped doing ours. And did we communicate that to the teachers? I would assume that we did.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so that takes care of that. So in 2021, 2022, we will be required to pony up this money should a teacher become nationally board certified.
Well, the state is going to give us this money, or so they say. So it's all a process of getting approved by Texas Tech and TEA. Specifically, Tech is in on the local designation system piece of it. But if we sit there and say, Splendora ISD, fine, we're part of Cohort E, any teacher that's nationally board certified, you know, if you want to become nationally board certified, fantastic, we'll submit your names. And there's a registry of them anyway. We have no, by the way, I checked, we have no national board certified teachers.
And well, that's the other point of that. I've known nationally board certified teachers.
No, because if they're going to get that, then I don't think
you can't ignore that. Although that's actually
it does.
No. You know, a good training.
It completely negates this.
Is it too high of a goal?
And that's it. So I want to kind of go back to that for
a
second.
I'm telling you, the teachers were rock stars who did that. If they were really, really good teachers. So, I mean, you know, if that helps them alone.
I did contact the company. Talk with them who runs the certification for National Board, and just said, like, what is pass rate, you know? And they said most teachers will at least have to take 1 to 2 modules twice. They're not going to be successful. So, you know, it's going to cost money. It's going to be an investment. I think we have this year, plus we have the legislative session to see where the winds are on this. I just don't like such a big part of it being tied to star scores. But I will continue to keep you guys updated. And we will have, trust me when I say we will have more TIA workshops in the future.
I think most people thought it was probably going to go away. And it's not.
I'm not quite following yet about
our experience.
So I don't think the National Board is
going to do it. You go through, you take the modules, you pay the fees.
They will likely get the money.
But what is it that we have to provide, that we have to begin the work in the 2021-2022?
We're going to plan which one we're going to do and how we're going to track all this.
But it's not at our expense, right? So it's really, that's what I'm not quite.
Choice in that. We can choose to do it. We can choose to pay some of the fees. We can do that. But we need,
I don't know.
We're just kind of bringing this to you guys.
Only 30% of them can get it, though?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then
only 30% of them. They're school or 30%. They're saying.
True.
They're saying that.
Already gave us money. That's what I'm thinking.
It's the biggest payout on TIA.
across the nation, right?
Sorry, Mr. Kroger, I had not finished.
It seems like it could be a good recruiting tool for school. I mean, tool.
What's our highest level for teacher pay?
We're going to help you get this.
It's going to be a retention tool if you don't.
The ones that we have, they're good.
It can be an anti-retention tool if you don't do it. This is going to widen the gap.
It is the inequity gap. But, I mean, it's still pretty early.
I thought only 30%, is it 30% of each district or 30% statewide? Or
the numbers I kept hearing was 30% state. I mean, I think what they're talking about is the biggest payouts on it. Which, once again, how do you figure? Because they're going to keep going back to those star scores. So I guarantee you, people in College Park are probably going to knock it out, their national board certification.
Even that depends on how they use the star scores. If you do added value, it's not quite as...
But we'll start to see this ramp up a little bit now that we're heading into the legislative session and we'll start getting more information. But I was honestly blown away when I heard Lucas Ashby last week talk about there's great traction, because a lot of people were asking, are we still doing this? It seems like a really bad thing to put money into when we're facing the deficit. Mm-hmm. That's some reading academies, and I can tell you that there's a lot of traction.
Yeah.
Some very important people, which means it's Patrick and Brad, and the only thing that's going to change that is if they're not in power. So I don't think we have enough information right now.
Yeah,
so
this
is a
the first cohort isn't even through yet on this, so... I promise you, as the state releases more, we will keep bringing back information to you.
Can I just ask one more question? I'm so sorry, but I know we got to go. I got to go too. I got a lot to do. But I'm still not clear what our responsibility will be in this. If this is a individual program, you go and take this. What is, and the state is paying them if they haven't already paid us. What do we think is our responsibility in this?
It could be fees. It could be anything that, hey, you come to Barbers Hill, I'll give you an extra period to work on your nationally board. There's all these things that potentially could happen. That what it's going to do is create a competition.
Yes.
So our responsibility will be to create a plan to be competitive.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes.
In a nutshell. And well, like Kevin said, they may come back and say, we already gave you the money.
And that's what I'm curious about as well, because, it talks about this as an HB3 initiative, so...
Correct. Everything that came out of HB3, we've heard the same narrative about hospital. We already gave you the money for that.
Yep.
We've already gave you the money for that. So it's 100% budget impact.
And we don't even know, when they talk about high value on STAR... We don't have any, no measurement.
It's going to be interpreted yet.
Yeah. This is a nightmare all around. I mean, I just can't even, one, it completely goes against our values. It completely goes against, to whom are we accountable and for what, right? And we don't even know, I don't know.
ETS.
I think at the end of the day,
it irritates me because we worked so hard to come up with something that truly... gives even $500, some little bonus to teachers who do the things that we value.
Right.
And this, it completely negates that without it, and we have no say-so in it other than we're going to have to come up with a plan to be competitive.
And that's it on my end. So I will keep you guys informed, but TIA is going nowhere.
One other thing, when you're looking at the nepotism thing, there's a rule about the size of the district or the county.
I think it's the county.
County.
It's the county. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, because everybody's related.
You have to get too big, right? You have to get big enough.
Yeah. We don't have very many people who run for office at all.
Right, because everybody's related. Yeah.
This is where we would talk about the stipends.
So here's the deal. Okay, so back in, we went visited with PASA. Remember, we were in College Station, and I said, hey, I want you to look into something potentially in the spring, if we can give our teachers, because some districts did a technology stipend, and that was before we got our cuts. No, before we got our $1.4 million cuts. And so I think if, when we look at those things, we always like to give things that are creditable, right? And those one-time stipends are not creditable. That's not a big deal. it's just like things are really tight. And so I think if we were to get additional money that we did not anticipate, I think that's the number one thing we would look to do, is to give something to our employees. Now, having said that, I'll let Kevin.
So is it necessary to go across the board on that?
I think if you don't give it to everyone, mm-hmm. if it's that kind of deal, then you're really going to.
Yes.
Who would you want to focus on?
Teachers. I just think if you do that, you're devaluing a huge part of your.
Who else didn't step up?
You know, how do you?
Would be my question.
I would be angry.
To be honest, and it's not any of their fault, but there's only one segment of our employees that didn't have to step up in some way or another, and that's our bus drivers. And that's only because we didn't have anything for them to do, but they would.
But what's, is it more stepping up or some, and this may come off like I don't want it, but inconvenience, right?
Inconvenience.
Like what? I guess it isn't. I guess that's
important. Yeah,
that's not important. That one.
I want
to know.
I don't know. I'm not in here every day, but that's what I'm saying. Like the bus drivers, we had to wear a mask, right? A little bit extra cleaning. Well, what about your maintenance?
Now that we're running again, they have stepped up. I guess my comment should have been in the shutdown stage when we shut down.
Yeah, there wasn't anything
they were left
for them
out
to
there
do.
Where custodial was in doing, and you know, and all of them were doing in segments. It's not like every one of the custodial workers or food service or whoever. But yeah. Now that, I mean, bus drivers again, they're working, keeping things clean on that can going down the road where those kids are confined. Granted, they've got lower loads, but.
I haven't thought about that. Do we have to do every other seat in the bus?
Not as long as we're masked.
Yeah, as long as we're masked, everybody in the middle
bus. But we do what we can on small loads. That will continue to try.
I hadn't even thought about that. But
you know, high school teachers have probably been more stressed than elementary, but how do you differentiate between who's had more responsibility during the pandemic and who hasn't? I mean, I don't know. I think we're creating a whole spate of issues if you just focus on one group to give a stipend to. That would be.
My problem is I just don't know where this financial picture is going to end.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, I get good. I totally get it. It's just, you know, like I said, if there's something.
Well, and if I'm just looking at money, for short of substitutes, that's directly affecting our kids. Mm-hmm. And really whether teachers can take time mm-hmm. off, which they might need. And they don't want to leave their kids because there's not a substitute. So, I mean, to
well, and go back to that quarantine example. I mean, that's happening so often now, right?
Teachers maybe covering a class and a half or two classes during
that. Yeah, and then that makes it extra on top of it. It's
as long as we're subject to staffing, I would not be surprised if we see a mass exodus at the end of this year.
Absolutely.
I think that's
across
the state.
No, I'm not just
before.
I'm just saying it's.
I've talked to so many people.
We were in a shortage before COVID. Like a record shortage of teachers nationwide mm-hmm. before COVID, and this is going to do nothing but compound it.
And normally when the economy's bad, we see a rise in teaching, but not.
Well, God love them. It's not our fault, but you can only ask so much. You know, I mean,
everybody that had ills and complaints before, but they still have the same ones.
I think we appreciate it, but it would have to be across the board. It really would have to be, or it's insulting, because everybody works so hard. Yeah. Especially
you know, so much to go around, you know.
Yeah, well, think about the cleaning crew, you know. I mean, they're double their work. They get paid nothing.
That's where, again, I feel bad for the way I think half the time, but I know that there's probably some of them that you bang your head on the wall and they probably still ain't going to help out anyway. Well, then here you are. Oh, we're going to give across the board.
Yeah, but most of the time, Jason, you think that, but most of the time everybody works really, really hard. It doesn't always look like that, but I have not worked in a place where teachers are not working really, really hard. It's just, I mean, if you don't always see it, you know, I don't know.
Well,
and maybe you've got something in mind, I don't know.
If they're not working really hard, that's not administrative. I mean,
that's on them.
Say, hey,
that's on them.
You ain't cutting it, man. I mean,
it's all us.
Yeah. And sometimes it doesn't happen.
Very high stress levels.
They're not moved quickly enough. But.
Very high stress levels.
This is a perfect segue to give a little pat on the back to our newest hand down there on the end of the table. because the structures and processes that he's bringing, again, teacher attendance, it's in the focus.
I saw that. And it's like 97%. I think
it was less than the kids. The teacher's attendance was less than the kids. That's what struck me at that info.
Maybe I was looking at something. What was I looking at?
I was going to say, if we were at 97%, I wouldn't be
having issues with that.
I wouldn't be having those issues.
You're right. You're absolutely right. That was stupid. Maybe I was looking at.
His focus is to get it to that.
Yeah.
Because that's why we need subs, right? If the teachers are taking.
I'm taking that back because that was a dumb comment.
Okay, I'm going to close it at 8:57. We good?
Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. I forgot that was. Well, at least we got the meeting. Yeah, right? What did we resolve?
Katie, I'm supposed to get something from you.
Thank you so much.
And Katie, I didn't know what this was, so I didn't sign it.
Yes. Kevin, will you explain this resolution?
Yeah, I didn't know what it was, so I didn't sign it.
That's the
class. That's the investment tool that we're adding to our arsenal.
Okay, I just didn't have
like
that.
Like a text pool type investment tool.
Suzanne, I always love you. And I hate to ever you don't see that.
I just.